For January the 24th, 2014, we talk about whether or not we want to change the podcast name to Candy Level Saga. We talk about the game Risk of Rain, and we ask you what you wish you could play but cannot. Welcome to the 48th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
My name is David Meinsmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks for joining us tonight, fellas.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure.
Yeah. And thank you, listener, for joining us. Whenever you're listening, we'll assume it is night. So, guys, I've got a little game that I need to tell you about. Not like a video game, it's something that's happening right here as I record this at my desk.
Are you getting drunk again?
Well, I've got a beverage. I'm not, like, it's not, you know, I don't have any, like, NyQuil here. I'm not playing that game. All right. So, to the left of my desk, I have a floor lamp. It is a lamp that has five lights. They're on kind of like a, like, octopus arm, kind of like gooseneck kind of things. And there is a compact fluorescent bulb in each of them. Okay.
Is this about to become like a Saw thing?
Maybe. I'm not sure. So I've had these bulbs in here for as long as I can remember. Like, no, okay. So since at least like last apartment. Fun fact, look on your power company's website. They probably will send you just a shitload of CFLs for free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's real neat. Like, and they last forever. But one of them is about to go out. And so... Oh. I'll be working here and fixated on my screen, and I will see a little flicker out of the corner of my eye from this lamp that looks like the lamp that's next to the dude's bathroom in his apartment in the Big Lebowski, except it's not colored, you see.
That clears that up.
It really ties the room together.
It does. it's my light in here. It lights up the whole room. It's the light of my life. But I can't figure out which one. So every time it flickers, I am not looking directly at it, so I can't determine. So if I were to just replace one of the bulbs at random, I only have a 20% chance of hitting it. So since I'm going to, you know, for the next hour and a half, 2 hours, be talking to you guys and not necessarily fixated on my screen, I'm going to be looking at these lights. And if you hear me shout, "Eureka!", it's not because I've had a light bulb turn on in my head. It's because I figured out which of the light bulbs I should replace, so I do not slowly go mad through some kind of like Chinese light torture.
Oh, this is amazing.
See, I'm just imagining you staring at the light, you know.
Yeah, I'll be
go
blind.
Ahead, take my day.
Yeah, next time you guys hear, like, "Cole, your eyes are so milky and useless." It's like, yeah, no, the bulbs, they got me.
Trick question. They were all blinking. They're taking shifts.
Well, so, kind of. That's how light works. But continue, Ben.
Wait, what? How many bulbs do you have with which to replace?
I have a spare bulb right here. I think I have like three more in my big energy efficiency kit, which is really funny because my power company assumes that energy efficiency is just light bulbs. Well, what I would like to do, like, and you know, just I've counted how many bulbs that I have in my house and calculated the cost to just replace all of them with LEDs, and I might do that, but it might be a slow cost that is rolled out over a couple of years as these CFLs burn out. So,
see, I really want to do the LED thing because I'm crazy about turning off lights when I leave places, and you actually shouldn't do that with CFLs.
Oh.
You're crazy or crazy bad at it.
No, why, like, I always turn off the lights when I leave a room.
Huh. Why should you not turn off CFLs?
Every time you do it, it burns away some of the ballast or something like that, so it'll cause them to fail early.
Hmm.
Huh.
And it's not cost it. Apparently, the EPA or whoever has said it's not cost effective if you're only going to be out of the room for less than 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was like, man, should I leave all my lights on while I'm at work?
No, yeah. No. It's just like, you know, it's a thing where, say, like, when I'm going, say, like, you know, the bathroom in the morning. You know, maybe I'll take a shower and obviously the light's on. Then I'll switch off the light as I go up and get some clothes. Then I'll switch on and brush my teeth or, you know, stuff like that where it's just like habitually switch it off all the time.
Yeah, as you were probably taught to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it, I missed the flicker. I was looking at the waveform. It's going to drive me mad. Yeah.
No. Oh, this is a fun game. I like this game.
Yeah. No, the Mythbusters tested that with incandescent bulbs back before Obama outlawed them by upholding that law that Bush signed into law in 2007. but yeah, for incandescents, they figured out that like it still makes sense to turn off the lights, but like because of those factors, that's where people get it from. But, you know, lights change and blah, 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 technology changes. So, yeah, you know what I care about more than the light bulbs that I'm staring at right now and trying not to lose my goddamn mind?
What could you care about more than that?
The lights that light up my screens that I play video games on.
Aww.
Yeah.
What a beautiful segue.
Yeah. So we've got some stuff in store for you. We're going to do a little bit of the brief, a little bit of the grind, and then we got a little bit of the multiplayer. So it's going to be a bog standard episode. Do you think that there's a standard bog that they like, you know, use that kind of like how they have a cesium atom that determines how long a second is?
Yeah, it's in Ohio.
I
you didn't know?
It's like somewhere in Britain.
Oh, yeah.
Britain, Ohio. It's like, it's like, you know how there's like a Rome, Ohio, and a...
Yeah, yeah, and a bell fountain.
See, but in Ohio...
Versailles.
Yeah, you're not allowed pronouncing it right, so it would have Lima. To be like Brighton.
Brighton. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a Brighton, Ohio.
Yeah. Ugh. But yeah, segment break. So it's time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video game news. Does anybody have one they want to volunteer?
I actually had one before the show started.
Awesome.
Momentous.
So
I
we
know.
Switched places because I had to look at something that I like had dug up a long time ago and thought that's not news, and then figured, oh, that kind of is, because the people should know. But I would
Were
ask
you.
Were you
spending too much time looking at your light before the podcast?
I don't know. Time is meaningless, Ben.
All right.
Thank you, Stephen, talking.
Yeah. Well, go for the good of us all.
I don't know how to segue from time is meaningless to my news story, so I'm just going to go to my news story.
Okay,
you
cool.
Rate a tomb.
Tomb Raider.
Stephen Hawking after he was 20.
God damn it. We're still on Stephen Hawking. All right.
Anyway. So one of I think I took a picture of this, but I think maybe my fourth or fifth favorite game last year was Tomb Raider as a kind of a surprise. It wasn't a fantastic game, but it had a lot of like potential.
It
was not bad. It was a more solid experience than most other games. So it was just like a little surprise. Anyway. Why do I speak of this game that is 10 months old? They released a new edition for it for the new console generation. And since none of us have new consoles yet, I figured this is something we could talk about and kind of speculate on.
Sure.
But there's a video that they released on Game Trailers that just kind of goes through some of the additions they made to this game. This is called the quote-unquote Definitive Edition, which I had heard about before, but I did not know it was, I guess, the context around it. But, yeah, so I don't know how to describe it outside of just saying watch the video, but it basically just goes through and talks about the different features that they added for the next generation of hardware. And so a lot of it's like light effects or motion effects and kind of like what they added as new physical objects. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. If you like that game and you like new consoles.
Okay. So the only comment that I have to make about this, I haven't played Tomb Raider. It's one that I really want to play. It's been on sale enough recently that I ought to have bought it, but I haven't. But my only comment on this is it's kind of weird that the HD remake cycle is such that we're getting an HD remake of this game instead of a Game of the Year edition of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
But what if the HD remake is the game of the year?
Oh, maybe. Who knows? 2014 looking kind of dry.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think the thing is they didn't really, instead of making additional content or like bonuses, they just decided to go back and up the presentation level for the new consoles. So I can kind of see why they would bill it as Definitive Edition over Game of the Year Edition.
Yeah, like if you're going to play Gun, you're going to play the 360 version of it, not the Xbox one, right? So this is one of those situations where it straddles console lines or generation lines, right?
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, I'm not going to begrudge them doing this, and it's nice to have a new coat of paint on a game. But it does kind of speak to me about everything that I would not be interested in seeing in the next generation, which is a new coat of paint on an existing game. Like, with this, I think it would have been cool. And again, not bad that they did this, but a missed opportunity. Would have been cool to see them do, like, hey, not only are we going to have a new coat of paint, but based on some of the new physics stuff we're able to do, here's like a little new gameplay minigame that's going to be added in. Or, you know, based on the number of items we're able to have on screen now, here's, you know, a new twist or a new weapon you can use, that sort of thing.
It's pretty shrewd because this could just be Eidos or Crystal Dynamics, whatever studio this is. I forget. This is them like saying, hey, we're still learning this next generation. Instead of like working out the kinks and getting adapted on a new game that might suck, a la Angel of Darkness, you know, the first PS2 Tomb Raider. Like, why don't we just take this thing that we already have designed, we know is good, apply these new tricks to it and learn it that way? Oh, and we'll also sell it and make it available to fans. Right.
Did they really call their game Angel of Darkness?
Oh, hell yes, they did. They also gave her a scrappy male sidekick that she spent half the time playing. I forget his name. Now I want to look up his name.
Was it voiced by Nolan North?
Yeah, very young Nolan North. Nolan North is like 50.
No, Ben, I mean, would you say that when you played Tomb Raider, it was visually impressive at all?
It was just a solid experience where I guess it brought back a lot of like feelings of like Resident Evil 4, where you're kind of alone against an army of people, I guess. And it's kind of like a Metroid game where you gradually collect weapons, explore your environment, and best foes with your weapons. I mean, they do a good design of so they partition the guns really well, like where each gun has a very specific use. So they do a good job of letting you know when to use each of those weapons, where it's not like, we'll say this about like Half-Life 2, where it's kind of like pick whatever you have bullets left for. Instead, it's more, you can be more judicious with, kind of where your enemies are and where you are. But then they also do a good job with the different, like, I don't know what to call them, upgrades or, like tools or
equipment,
it's like
keys.
The same. Yeah, it's like the same thing as like Metroid or Arkham. Your gadgets, I guess. Like
gadgets, sure.
They do a good job with multi-purposing those things, similar to Arkham. So
yeah.
Story wise, it looked like it kind of was positioning itself to kind of be the polar opposite of Far Cry 3. Is that kind of how it played out?
So what would the polar opposite of Far Cry 3 be?
Man, violence
it seemed
is awesome.
Like the storyline was semi-similar in terms of being like, you know,
on an island, save your friends.
Yeah, or you know, just kind of on the island, you know, sort of trapped, you know, start with no resources, work your way up, that sort of thing. But instead of just like ending up being like, you know, burning down fields full of pot with a flamethrower while dubstep plays, keeping it a little more serious.
So by polar opposite, you mean 20% off.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really just wouldn't compare the two games, I guess.
Okay.
They both happen to have like a same setting and maybe a similar story, but that's about where the similarities end. I don't know. They're very different formats and very different gameplays, I feel at least. But
the big difference I would call out,
where you burn pot fields while listening to dubstep?
I don't think so. I was going to say Grand Theft Auto has the burning pot fields, but not the dubstep part. Saints Row has the dubstep, but not the burning pot fields part. So I don't know.
So we're set up for a Reese's situation.
We need a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not offended by this. I think that it's pretty cool. Like, if somebody was, like, late to the Tomb Raider party train and they had one of the new systems, why not? Go for it.
Yeah, you must. Yeah.
Yeah.
And besides, other games just don't have the same kind of being bad at falling from ledges that Tomb Raider does. Just watching this video, she like falls awkwardly and hurts herself coming off of more zip lines and dropping from more places than any other character.
They have a lot of graphic death scenes too. If you fall at the wrong time, or don't fall, or you know, fall when you're not supposed to,
fall at the wrong time, such as when the ground is too far below you.
That is one case, yes. Where you don't want to fall.
It's the most common one.
You would think someone whose job title was Tomb Raider would be a little bit better at like dismounting from a zip line.
Ah, she's still learning her grappling hook.
Yeah, this is an origin story, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's like a reboot. I think they already did like an origin story in the PlayStation era, but yeah. No, she's.
But this is the definitive origin story.
She's still getting her cave legs. Yeah. yeah. Do you guys want to know the name of the sidekick from Angel of Darkness?
Sure. Yes.
Curtis Trent. Curtis with a K, which falls into the usual. Gosh, so being a person who has two first names and two last names. it really annoys me when in video games, like, they just kind of take, like, oh, our main character just has two first names because that's badass, we think.
Cole plays to escape all that.
Yeah, I know, right? Man, I'm not playing to be reminded of my stupid name. So there you go. A fun factoid.
Yeah.
Kind of like when it during the Golden Globes, whatever network popped up. Fun fact, Michael J. Fox has Parkinson's disease.
Oh.
And I'm not laughing at him having Parkinson's disease. I'm just laughing at the egregious use of the term fun fact.
Yeah. That's why I was awing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I just you tend to awe at the awful things that I say, and I want to make sure that I'm not. I need this is like Dragon Age. I don't want you to leave the party. Yeah.
Normally I'm pretty awkward, but not that awkward. Awkward, awful.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, it's a fine line. So I'll go because mine's short.
Sure.
So this kind of came out a little while ago, but I just recently tried it for myself. But playing games on a Mac. Generally pretty tough, and the emulator selection is not that great. Oftentimes you're kind of scraping around for emulator distributions that maybe might be years old or are on sites that look like they will give you STDs by proxy, et cetera. Most emulation sites, pretty rough. And kind of a not Apple-like experience if you are a person who likes the Apple experience of having a nifty UI and just having something be intuitive and easy to use. But if you, as a person who likes classic games and owns a Mac, go to openemu.org or openemu, however you want to go. It's just open and then emu. You can find a program called openemu. MU, bleh. Open Emulator. Let's just call it the Open Emulator Project. You can find a program that wraps in support for like all of the systems you would expect. You know, your NESs, your Genesises, your SNESs, blah, blah, blah. But also like a bunch of like weirdo ones that I wasn't too sure how you could, accurately emulate, right? Such as, let's say, the Game Boy Advance. That one's pretty hard on the Mac to emulate. The Game Gear, Neo Geo Pocket, the Virtual Boy. What? TurboGrafx-16? Yeah. Yeah, you have to have two monitors.
Guys, the Oculus Rift is going to be the premier Virtual Boy emulator.
Oh, shit. Killer app. Boom. And by killer, I mean somebody's going to develop a horrifying disease that will make them drive off of a cliff. So what it does is like you know it has like these emulators that the project developers on their open GitHub thing have gone together and put in. You install it, it installs all of them. It scans your system for whatever ROMs you have on your system. Obviously, games that you own, and even then, delete them after 24 hours. Obs, right? And then you can select them from a nice little thing, and you can make your own collections of like Final Fantasy games or however you want to go, kind of like playlists on iTunes, and you can give them star ratings and cultivate your own little library of games that you legitimately own, I swear, officer. So
yeah, our legal department forces us to say that you can only do it if you delete them within 24 hours of a full moon that you already own.
But they permit us to say, wink, wink. No, don't pirate stuff if you don't have to. But, you know, if you have no other choice, you might as well do it in style. The only thing that I'm a little bit, like, weird about is that it has a Nintendo DS emulator on it, which, like, I'm excited about because there are some, like, fan translations of survival horror games I thought that I was not going to be able to play, just because the DS is kind of a closed system and this makes it like that. But, like, DS games are still recent enough that you're going to be able to go get it. So maybe cool it on that just a little bit. And they've got other support coming down the pike, like for Sega CD. I know is one of them that I had a lot of trouble with recently for the Snatcher episode of Watch Out for Fireballs. But this is like really cool. It was a very painless experience. It works great with the Xbox 360 controller because it's like at a different shell level or something like that. Whereas you kind of have to hope that every individual emulator will treat it right. But yeah.
Wait, did you say edit at the shell level?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I just said that. So, like, you just have to hope that, okay, so the your 360 controller talks to this program, which then talks to the emulator underneath it, as opposed to hoping that the emulator underneath it has the ability to play it. That's my assumption about the way that it understands and about the way that it, like, basically uses my controller in stuff that I didn't assume I was able to use it for before. So. Yeah. So yeah, it is a really shockingly good program for completely free, and I want anybody who shares my affliction of really liking Mac stuff to know about it, because it is, as I said, the way to play games of questionable legality in style, and not in a emulator called Nesticle, whose pointer is a bloody severed penis that your mom yells at you about.
That would be a problem.
Yeah.
So OpenEMU.
I would like to point out that we classified this as an affliction.
I'm self-effacing, right? You know, I knew that if I didn't say it. Okay, so if I didn't say it, somebody was going to say, yeah, if you have to play games on a Mac, right? High five, bro. I'd be blah, blah. But if I say it, people say, like, yeah, I know. It's kind of ridiculous. But do you on Windows have something that, like, bundles all these things together? Now I'm the smug one again.
Ooh. Yeah. And their website is pretty badass.
It's great. Yeah, it's all HTML5 and Ajaxy and stuff. It's great.
Yeah, and like stuff moves around as you scroll down. I'm a big fan of these kind of the websites that do kind of the alternate setups. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, like the parallax effects and the
trying to screw with me?
No.
No, this is good. I've got it open on my on my web browser. I shall check it out and download after the podcast.
Yeah. Once again, that is openemu.org. Were you taking also, exception? Like, go ahead, Ben.
Also a new sponsor of the show.
No, I did.
That
I,
and
I believe,
PlayStation Plus.
I believe in their product. So, oh, man.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, so were you, like, what did we say that upset you so, David? Because I only ever hear reactions like that when I talk about math in front of Ben.
just being like, yeah, I really like the Ajaxes and the...
Ajax is a library of stuff you can use to do nifty visual effects on HTML. Is that not true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There we go. And I know that sometimes, along with HTML5.
Wait a second.
Okay.
I thought Ajax stood for
asynchronous. There we go.
Yeah. Something. So that, like, when you reload a web page, it only reloads one part instead of reloading the whole web page.
Yeah, but it does that via HTML.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it a library?
Would it be qualified as a plug-in?
No. It is actually any Ajax that I've ever implemented in my very, very limited web design and implementation experience.
Batteries.
Yes. No. As of geez, that's weird. No, has been implemented through HTML to do like little visual tricks. There could be stuff that runs underneath it, like I know like Gmail You know, their web interface uses a lot of it. But I'm quickly out of my depth. And I just, all that I know is if you see something fancy on a page, it's either CSS3, HTML5, or Ajax.
Unless it's not working, in which case it's Flash.
Yeah. Well, God, what is this, 1998? Are we on Newgrounds? I'm not renting it shoes. It's not taking your turn, dude. Guess what movie I watched when I was sick? Okay. Let's see here. Dennis, what you got?
I got some merchandise.
Oh, okay.
So I put the link in the robot right when we started up the call. But The Last of Us is a game that I think all of us played on the show and a lot of people who listen played, and is really, really incredibly good. And, well, one, you can support it by buying the, support it like it's an indie game that needs to get off the ground. One, you can get more by buying their DLC that's coming out in February. Also, though, they reached out to the fan community and asked people to design t-shirts inspired by The Last of Us. And so this is a little bit more, you know, grassroots. They just posted the 5 winning designs, and have added those to a couple other pre-existing designs they have. And they're really, really good. And they kind of span from relatively abstract to kind of like just one, you know, a little cartoony vignette of Ellie and Joel, and kind of everything in between. So I there's no t-shirt in this set that I dislike. And it's kind of cool to see kind of the fan created interpretations of The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. So, great game, and it's one of those things where, you know, I'd be happy to have pretty much any one of these t-shirts on the site. So I thought I'd share it because it's a cool thing.
Yeah. Do we know, so these 5 people, did they get compensated for this at all?
I'm looking at the site right now. I have to imagine they do.
Yeah, it helps. I mean, I would hope so. So
designs. You know, I can't see on the site, but yeah, I would definitely want to be assured of that before endorsing it fully.
I'm of two minds because, let's see here.
You're a split personality.
No, I mean, this, you know, it runs deep, but not that deep. No, I'm of two minds because I am skeptical of most marketing ploy kind of things, except for those that involve like user participation. Like, hey, if you've done this thing, let us know. We can share this with the broader community. I think that's kind of cool. Like that is the kind of marketing-ish thing that is probably least offensive to me, is the stuff that gets the community behind. But if they are taking people's artwork and using it to, you know, market, or even using it under unfair terms to, you know, to like make money off of t-shirts selling their thing, that's kind of not the coolest thing in the world. So assuming the best of this, that like these are contest winners who were justly rewarded for their efforts, then yes, awesome, great. I like these designs, especially the last one, kind of with the bloomy tree kind of thing. Not a huge fan of the clicker face lady with the skulls, but
this little Ed Hardy.
Ed Hardy?
Ed Harvey? Harvey Ed? Ed that guy. Ed Hardy, right?
Yeah, I think maybe.
He does like the crazy, you know, skulls and tattoo style designs.
Maybe.
Is there a story behind the man bag, the Merce?
It's the Firefly logo.
Yeah. It's the resistance group.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they do not get paid per shirt, which is kind of shitty. They do get a prize, and it doesn't say what the prize is. At least, well, I'm sure it does. I can't find what the prize is.
And so, like, I know that, like, on Threadless, I think that on Threadless people don't get paid per shirt. But if your design is chosen, you get like some sizable amount of money, like $2,500 or something. If I believe stories I've heard on their podcast, like it's a pretty big deal because Threadless, they make a lot of money on those shirts. Like if you're producing on that scale, you can actually make money off of shirts. Whereas, you know, in a smaller operation, you're going to lose money on shirts or just barely squeak by. But yeah, so like if they got like a pretty big cash prize, cool, per shirt, I don't know, maybe, but yeah, I hate to be a stick in the mud about it, but yeah.
It's important to be conscious about that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to search for prize on the page to see. one of our prizes. Prize. Does not say what the prize is, at least on this FAQ.
No.
Anyway, if you're interested in the shirts and you know, want to look it up, I will, you know, I'll post to the Facebook page later.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll put something in the show notes about it too. Man, we're all about like getting people to do shit. This is like this isn't meant to be commercial hour. Oh well, but no, I think this is, you know.
Yeah, we find things that we enjoy as people who enjoy video games, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's a relatively slow news week anyway.
Yeah. So. Yep.
Yep.
But that's mine. Is cool t-shirts.
Cool, David. Round us out.
Yeah, apparently Candy Crush Saga now owns the trademark or copyright or patent or whatever it is you own on such things for the word candy in relation to games.
Oh, wow.
What?
And apparently they're also in the process, I believe in the EU, of trying to get the rights to the word saga.
I'm sorry.
Come again?
Ugh, that is so gross. What? So you guys, are you guys aware of like the of the shit that Monster Cables have tried to pull and successfully pulled in a lot of things? So Monster Cables, which sell things that are scientifically proven to be no better than using wire hangers at conducting a signal to your television. Monster cables are a huge rip. If you didn't know that, get all of your cables either from Big Lots, if you have to go to a store right away, Amazon, or Monoprice, because you should never pay more than $10 for any cable that is less than 15 feet. Pro tip. Mm-hmm. Monster decided to go out and sue anything and everything that had Monster in the title. I think that maybe they tried to take a swipe at a Monster Energy drink because it was a smaller company, but they were like miniature golf companies in America, like small coastal, like mom and pop. Hey, we run this mini golf thing during the summers when it's in season, and it's like Monster mini golf, blah blah blah. They were hit with either cease and desist orders or like were sued for trademark infringement because
Yikes.
Monster Cables owned the term Monster as a title to a product.
Wow, and so Candy Crush is going to, or sorry, Candy trademark Crush is going down this route as well.
Well, they've said that they're going to be benevolent dictators and like not.
Have they actually said that? Were those the words they used?
No,
it's for your own good.
Yeah,
no, they did not say that literally. But
they did not use benevolent.
Yes, they said our benefactors.
Right, exactly. No, they've said that, you know, they're not going to be going after, you know, companies that are just using the game. Their argument is they're trying to use it to go after companies that are just making clones off of their game.
Okay.
Like
of which there are thousands.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And that's a symptom of, you know, Apple and especially Google not policing their shit.
Well, I assume. Right. Sorry, Dave. I think your point of like Bejeweled was kind of glossed over there. I assume they don't mean they're trying to like trademark all of Match 3, but specifically like Match 3 candy games that are trying to trick people into thinking that it is Candy Crush.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that's what it is. I have mixed feelings about whether I care, but but I guess that's legitimate, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I kind of feel like it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be that somebody, if you get popular, that people are going to rip you off. It shouldn't be that that's the cost of doing business, that if your game is called Candy Crush, there will be thousands of like derivative names of apps that are, you know, trying to just like, it's Candy Squish. It's the Candy Squish Chronicles. You know,
come on, man. Like, you called it Candy Clone. Are you even trying?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, this one's, you know, 99 cents or whatever, instead of bleeding you dry for a couple of thousand. And like, I would hope, which happens, like Candy Crush is an awful thing. Mm-hmm. We all know this. But I kind of feel like that's the cost of doing business for being like really, really popular. Right.
Right.
And it's up to like it's not a failing that they need to go in and like, you know, make it so that no other game can ever use candy in its title. It's that Apple needs to get their shit together and, like, be responsive to those kind of claims. Although that system can be gamed, and Apple is not responsive to anything because they don't want their system to be gamed, et cetera, et cetera. They make money off of everything, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, like, going in and saying, like, no, taking your ball and going home just because you happen to be the, like, the biggest and best thing. Like, there's going to be more casualties for this than there would be for, like, them just maybe losing out a little bit of, like, SEO share because of that. Because if somebody searched for Candy Crush, god damn it, Candy Crush is going to show up at the top because they're fucking Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, Greg, clones that are truly trying to be deceptive are a problem. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the, you know, actually making clones, you know, that's kind of competition is part of the system.
Yeah. If you do something that's, you know, incredibly popular, people are going to come at you just as a way of, like, maybe learning. Like, in the best case scenario, if somebody really likes Minecraft and they're trying to learn Java, they're going to be like, okay, how do they do that? And then, you know, like, in the best, the better of cases, not the best of cases, you know, somebody's going to come along and, like, say, how would this work in 2D? And then they're going to make Terraria, and then Starbound comes out of that, in which case, sweet. Yeah. I don't know.
Also, like, did you see... Oh, sorry. Never mind.
Okay. Disregard.
I was about to tangent really bad.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, it's in, like, you raise a good point. Like, so how would we feel if Notch went and tried to sue the creators of Starbound and Terraria? Like, and again, you could argue those are significantly different, but... You know, we maybe take this a little less seriously because it's a candy match three game, but, you know, still.
Well, on one side, Notch also kind of took that idea from Infiniminer, which came before that. Not took it, but again, did the same thing, appropriated it, and then just happened to get really, really popular off of it. Right.
Well, and the thing is, you can't copyright or trademark or whatever ideas.
Well, you can't. Unless software, like, patent reform goes through, you can do that. However, written game rules cannot be patented and trademarked and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right. So, you know, like there are cases where that squeaked through, such as Nintendo's patent on sanity meters, which, for some reason, I've got, boo. Like the biggest boo in the world. Yeah, speaking of Big Boo's haunt. Weird. That's like circular. That's very sound in a circular fashion, a little bit. But anyway, so I'm not too pleased to hear that they successfully got through with it. But
I feel like fundamentally, though, any time a legal situation is resolved by "Don't worry, we won't be a dick about it," that should be a red flag.
So this is me taking something wholesale from Idle Thumbs, but their big thing is to talk about Robot News, which is, you know, Boston Dynamics and the horrifying things that come out of there with the big dog and the pet man and whatever, like the really scary stuff. But when Google bought them, like they came out and said, how funny is it that Google's motto in, you know, 2004 was "Don't be evil." 2010, evil's pretty tricky to, you know, define. 2013, the biggest advertising company in the world owns the biggest robotics company in the world and is now making military robots.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, when somebody says, like, no, trust us, dog, we're on the up and up, like, that is absolutely a reason to not trust them because they might not be on the up and up.
Because then they'll be making the big dog.
It is evident. It is a reflexive, self-evident, thou protesteth too much, Candy Crush. Oh man, good times, man. That's scary. I'm sad that we ended on a scary note like that.
Which part?
I think all of it. I'm scared of robots.
Copyright law or Google?
Yeah. Okay. So copyright. If they tried to copyright the idea of using candy in a game, there is prior art such as the entire Kirby area. Okay. So that, you know, they wouldn't be able to stand on that. They would just send a bunch of C&Ds to a bunch of small companies and stifle development. Blah blah blah. Trademark. That's something they have to defend, and they will defend because they have all of the money in the world. The patent would be the bigger concern, which is if they came in and said Match 3 is ours. So, like, and at the very least, their trademark thing is just a little bit less evil. It's not as good as if they tried to do a copyright line, but blah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in media law, so it's hard.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing in this year of our Lord, in this week of our Lord, of, you know, January 20-something, 2014. I'm not even sure anymore. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can go first.
That's the agnostic version of the year.
Yeah,
the year of our Lord, I don't know.
We can't be certain what year it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, time is subjective. We've already established time is meaningless. Ergo, bleh.
Bang.
Ben, go. Ergo, bang.
Yeah, so I've just been playing XCOM, so it's kind of boring. But well, not the game, but my grind.
Yeah.
So I'm just progressing through it. You know, it takes a little bit of time. I've been on like this the single like event or whatever for the past like 2 or 3 days because I've only sat down and played it for like 20-minute chunks at a time, but I haven't gotten through it. So yeah. So it's still awesome.
It might be worth pointing out that you actually can work yourself into a corner where you just are not equipped to take on the mission that you have to do. And you can kind of have an ending of the game where it's like, well, I won't be able to beat that, so I better start over.
You're the XCOM they have, not the XCOM they need.
It's I mean, that's, if you can call it a complaint against the game, you can kind of screw yourself early on with decisions that don't really play out until later in the game.
I mean, do you know that you're making decisions?
You should try the original XCOM.
Yeah. You go ahead, Ben.
Overtalk. So I've only been doing this though within like missions where you're deploying your troops. So like I'm not like because I'm trying to play where everybody just stays alive, but because I don't want to deal with failure. So so I just keep saving and reloading if like people will die, and so I just play it until everyone's cool. So. So that's kind of why it takes long, is, you know, like I'll rush in and figure out where people are and then reload and then do something. So it's very far from the Iron Man, but, you know, it's my first playthrough.
Oh, so, wait, are you saying when you're doing, like, the panic missions, whatever, you're trying to save everyone?
I tried that for a while, but then I realized it's super hard to do that. So I'm talking more about my, like, soldiers, the people who I've already leveled
the
up.
The people with names.
Yeah, civilians are just fodder.
Yeah, so civilians are statistics.
Yeah, but it's still a sweet game. So, yeah.
Any standout moments from the game or crazy things that have happened?
It's really fun when you get all, because like it's getting to the point where some of the missions you'll have even more than six people. You'll have like a bunch of people, so it's really fun to put everybody next to one another, overwatch everybody, and then watch a stealth person appear and try to attack someone and just be like decimated by the entire team. So
nice.
Yeah. Have you seen any interesting implementations of stuff that you know is from the expansion? So the troop modification stuff, you know, like are there actual ramifications to making those decisions?
I haven't found out yet, but I've been trying to figure out what's in the expansion and what's not, just from discussing it with people at work. Because some other people that I know at work have played the original one, but not the expansion. So every so often I'll be like, oh, yeah, so what do you think of this mission? They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm like, oh, expansion. So, but it's surprising because playing it now, it seems like a, you know, like fully well-realized game. So it's surprising to think of some of the elements not being in it. In the first run, so that's kind of interesting.
So it's not like you're picking a mission icon that's like enemy within exclamation mark blah 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 trademark Candy Crush.
Yeah. It's very well integrated. Certainly. Mm-hmm.
So this question might be a little bit too personal to your professional life, if that is at all possible. So feel free to decline. But being that you work in something of a game design function, in a game design esque kind of company, do you talk to your coworkers about games a lot, like stuff that they're playing and things, or is it more like you have a clique of people that you just know who play games that might not rise above who you would find in any normal vocation?
So it's very dependent upon the age of the person. So the it's kind of a – like I'm one of the youngest people, but like the age is typically like 30 to mid-40s is the typical age. And it's like if you – for most of the people who are in like their late 30s or 40s or above, they usually have families, so they just do not play video games. You know, like that's not their prerogative at all. And so, yeah, so typically I do not talk to those people. Some of the people who are closer to my age also play games. And so, yeah, so I can talk to them about that. But also it's very different because the games we make are much different than video games. There's, you know, or there's, you know, different incentives and different
design ethic that has to go into it.
Yeah. 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 So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Hmm. I was just curious, you know.
Yeah. I guess I would summarize it by saying it's very age dependent. Mm-hmm. But I still, you know, yeah, I can talk to people about, like, there, you know, there were at least a handful of people who played The Last of Us, at least a handful of people who played Bioshock Infinite. So I could, you know, I could talk about games that I had played last year that I wanted to talk about. So
that's always an interesting experience of feeling someone out, you know, at work. It's like, you know, you mention something games related and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, I've got a PS3. It's like, oh, cool. What do you play? And it's Call of Duty Ghosts and the previous Call of Duty and the Call of Duty before that. Oh, okay, cool.
And I really like I'm Madden 2012. You. Yeah.
But I feel like you can still have a conversation with those people.
Oh, yeah,
no,
sure. Yeah.
No, you cannot. You cannot speak to them.
I mean, it's a judgmental conversation.
Not really. I mean, just like, okay, so we can joke. We can joke as much as possible because that is the function of what we do on this show. But, like, at the very least, like, if you are standing face-to-face with the person, I would hope that you wouldn't, like, condemn them outright for, like, oh, you only play Call of Duty? Blah, let me tell you about these visual novels. Ugh. Like, I can't imagine, like, a more Goonie thing. But, like, in relating to somebody like just on like this weird like Dale Carnegie like let's talk about you level, like that gives you a lot of like opportunity to talk about like, oh, like where does this fit into your life, you know, like where's this blah blah blah. And like from an us perspective, it's like, oh, have you tried Spec Ops? Because if you like shooters and you're like willing to, you know, suffer a little bit of story, like it's actually really pretty cool, like of an experience. And then boom, mm-hmm. you like that gives you more of a wedge than somebody who just doesn't play games. Right.
Yeah.
See, I feel like be like, boom, oh, now you feel awful about yourself.
Well, no, I mean,
sucker.
Like,
it sounds like you're a video games evangelist.
A little bit. Like, you know, is that a bad thing?
No, not at all. I think it's tough to feel out there like, and I guess the reason I asked that question, you know, what do you play here? They say, and they'll, you know, they'll always ask, oh, you know, what are you playing? Or what are some good games? You like games? What are some good games? And it's like, okay, do I say like, you know, oh, hey, I'm playing Dark Souls and Gone Home? Or do I try to go with something a little more vanilla if they're looking for a recommendation? Like that kind of feeling someone.
I feel like it's good to be honest. Like to say like, oh, you know, I play this thing. It's like Dark Souls. It's a little bit, you know, it might be a little bit too intense for your time commitment. I always go to that as opposed to like saying, oh, you fucking like just, oh man, casual.
See, but, I always have trouble with Dark Souls because I have a lot of friends that are really into, you know, sort of some of the, you know, fantasy and, you know, really like some of the kind of dark fantasy, you know, heavy metal, you know, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And I think they'd like Dark Souls a lot, like the aesthetics, like the story.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to just recommend it to someone that I don't know is already a gamer.
Yeah, I only use that as the example just because it is just like the ready-made, like, oh, this is off-puttingly difficult, even though it actually isn't, but okay, whatever. And also it requires a bunch of time. Like when you're talking to somebody on that level, it's more like, where is this going to fit into your life?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's the bigger concern. And so that's why Dark Souls is brought up. If there is a subject matter interest, it's kind of like, oh, you might actually really like this, but you know, I have a lot of conversations about games with people at work. Like mostly from like a professional standpoint, because it informs just a lot of like projects that we're doing and, you know, et cetera. And just, you know, in general, like I work with, you know, I'm young as far as people at Epiphio go. But you know, like a lot of them have like families, and so we talk about Minecraft a lot and et cetera. And so like our conversations are usually like, oh, here's this thing that I'm playing, but you know, you might not be able to get into that, but like, oh, Starbound, like if you like this other thing, here it goes. So it's more about finding these connections and like being, you know, recommendation guy. So I spend a lot of my days talking about like iOS games. You know.
Yeah. I've also had the experience though where you say, you know, be honest about what you're playing, and I'll be like, oh, I'm playing Dark Souls, and they'll be like, what's that? And I'll be like, well, it's an RPG, it's kind of got a medieval setting, and it's really difficult and atmosphere, and I just see in their eyes that they're picturing me in like a wizard's hat and robes at home playing.
I don't know.
I'll be like, no.
But like for real, I think that is insecurities that are being carried forward from a bygone age. It's sure. Like I think that everybody is kind of aware of the differences and commitments, and you know, like just like we're slowly but surely getting rid of the stereotype that Dungeons and Dragons is LARPing, you know, saying, oh, I play this role playing game or this blah blah blah. You can say what's cool about it, which is like, oh, it's this like really like demanding game, but it's rewarding once you get through it, and it has, you know, it looks and sounds pretty neat, cool. And then you can get away from that and not sound like a total grognard, right?
Yeah. It's an interesting balance.
Yeah.
I would agree with you, but I don't know what a grognard is.
Yeah. It's a term from like tabletop wargaming, like going way, way back. It's just somebody who's just like, picture your prototypical like nerd goon type character, neckbeard and see. Yeah, like that. So it just, I like this thing, but I'm not insufferable. Let's talk as humans about these things that bring us joy. And if you do not play video games, then I will talk to you about movies or about television or about maybe things that are happening in your life. You know,
so, I like how that's last on the list.
Well, no, I just mean like, so I added that in, like, make so, almost okay. So it is funny. I added that in as defense because I didn't want it to sound like I could only relate to people via the media they consume, which is awful, and it, you know, is no way, shape, or form is that a way you should live your life.
It's a step above the weather, though.
A little bit, yeah, but it's like, oh, like you totally like go to church, talk to me about that, awesome, great, how's this, oh, your kid, let's talk about your kid, kids are tough, like just take a moment and learn about somebody besides you. I don't know, that's,
I feel like, imagine if you were a meteorologist, how awful would that be, that the only thing you can talk about to people, like in relation to your career, is the weather.
Man, that's like some Harlan Ellison shit.
Oh, that's amazing.
I would like to point out that this beer is, what, 10% alcohol by volume?
Yeah. No, I like this.
That's the funniest idea. Oh, that's good.
It's like, no. I think that's what the Nicolas Cage movie The Weatherman was about.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Which, actually, I kind of like that movie. I think that
I've only seen snippets. It's very weird to see only snippets of that movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Nicolas Cage is the guy that looks like a hound dog, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's got kind of those basset hound eyes. No, okay. So Nicolas Cage, he runs real hot. Either he's in Ghost Rider or he's in Leaving Las Vegas.
Literally riding hot.
Yep. Thank you for that. Sorry. I snorted there, but, you know, only because that was so funny because you caught it. It's hot and cold. Either he's awful, such as Ghost Rider or Family Man, or he's amazing, such as, like, Wild at Heart or, you know, Leaving
Con
Las
Air.
Vegas.
Con Air.
Okay. Like, I would put Con Air in the rock, like midway through. I would put Con Air in the Rock at like 50% Nicolas Cage.
The Cageosity.
Yeah. No, but like the only thing keeping Nicolas Cage from being Wesley Snipes right now is the fact that he literally has to do three movies a year to pay his taxes.
Yeah,
otherwise he would
crazy.
Be in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's all feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
What about The Wicker Man? Is that hot Nicolas Cage or cold Nicolas Cage?
Ooh, that is cold. Cold,
that's
cold.
B level Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Well, have you seen like the original Wicker Man?
I have not.
No, oh, although man. My understanding is it's actually really good.
It is super trippy. It's like The Prisoner level trippy. It's got what's his name? Saruman. It's got Christopher Lee in it. Yeah, it's crazy. So what they did was instead of being an island of all women like the modern one, it's an island of all men. And it's just like, and you know, instead of being like weird, you know, like sexual type, you know, stuff in the modern one, it's like this weird trippy, like just general. Yeah.
I was going to say there's women in the new one because there's a video of him punching a woman in the face in the new one.
you're burying the lead there, Ben. He's punching a woman in the face when he's dressed as a bear.
That was implied, of course.
Yeah. So, is there anything else we want to say about XCOM? Sorry.
No, the new Nick Cage class plays great.
But it's weak against anything with a flamethrower because it always has to ask how it got burned. Oh man. Yeah. Ben, you were saying something before that incredibly easy joke I made. Go.
No, we're done. Like this. We're gonna end with that.
Okay, cool. I'll go because I have two short examples.
Cool.
Prefaced
by
a lengthy story.
Can we go? Didn't Ben just say it's the end?
Ended the podcast,
okay, so,
dude. Sorry.
iTunes.
You're not the host anymore, Ben.
Well, no. Like, we have like 20 episodes of precedent giving him the power to end the show. Yeah. So if he says it, damn. Sorry for this really short episode of the level. Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, short by only an hour long. Yeah.
But
yeah, go ahead, Cole.
Okay, cool. So it's two short examples prefaced by a semi-lengthy and I hope interesting story. So I've got this money sitting around from when I said that I was going to buy the PlayStation 4 and, you know, doing tax returns, blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, hey, I might buy a PC, like instead of getting a Steam box, which I've got like a letter from somebody about that, which let's read during the multiplayer at the end of it, because somebody wrote in about Steam boxes and I neglected to read it last week. But yeah. So I'm pricing out components like I did around this time last year, thinking if I'm going to be spending money on gaming hardware, I would like to do it on a PC this time because that'll last a little while and I can play a bunch of games and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I would do one that was designed to run on my TV in my living room, you know, my 50-inch, so I could sit on my couch because I spend all day sitting at a desk looking at a screen that is roughly 18 inches from my face. I do not want to spend my leisure time doing that. Unless it involves a podcast, which that's not really leisure time because I claim that as business on my taxes. So, no, I mean, we make money off of this. It's taxable income. We're doing this. It's a business. We're doing it, guys. But no.
We're doing it live.
So to try this out, I have been running a laptop on my big TV here recently, but I haven't been able to do it that well because my adapter's been on the fritz. So I bought a new mini DisplayPort to HDMI adapter for my old laptop and also a wireless keyboard/trackpad combination. It's a Logitech thing. It's real cool, actually. It's got a touchpad off where the number pad would normally be. So I can manipulate stuff from the couch and the coffee table. And so I've been doing Steam Big Picture mode on my machine that I normally use to record gameplay footage. And it's been real neat. It's a good experience. I'm a little bit annoyed by the inconsistency with a bunch of games. Like, they say it has full controller support. However, I still have to bend down from, you know, my sitting position, my lounging position to use the touchpad to select stuff in the menus of games and et cetera, et cetera. It's not entirely on my 360 controller, but that's something that you take with PC gaming, which is incredible inconsistency in the user experience. But yeah, it is pretty cool to play PC games with a controller on your couch.
Nice.
Specifically a bunch of these indie games, two of which I will talk about now. So the first of which is a cool side-scrolling roguelike, rogue, called Risk of Rain.
Ah.
Yeah. So this is a game I didn't know until I launched it. I bought it on a sale a little while back, you know, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. It was like a greenlight game that was recently released fully, maybe, possibly, that is currently being developed by Chucklefish. So it's the same guys who do Starbound. And it is... To call it a side-scrolling Binding of Isaac is a little bit hasty, I think. But it does kind of match a little bit of that rhythm. So whereas Binding of Isaac is like the Legend of Zelda, in, you know, pretty much everything but name, specifically the way that it presents itself. This is a pixel art, really zoomed out side-scrolling game where you have access to a bunch of different abilities to fight your enemies, and they are on timers. So the thing that it does that is kind of different is, you know, you have your different trigger buttons that activate, you know, 1 through 4 of these abilities, and it's like an MMO. So you start out with the commando, and you've got your regular machine gun blast that doesn't require any cooldown time. But you've got the big cannon blast that requires like 3 seconds. You've got the machine gun blast that requires 4 seconds, and you've got your dash or your dive that makes you invulnerable but requires, you know, 5 seconds. And you're trying to clear a bunch of these enemies and exploring this randomly generated level in order to find a teleporter that, once you activate it, kind of brings in a couple of waves of enemies and then a boss that you have to kill. And then once you kill it and then kill all the other enemies in the level, you're able to move on to the next level. Like any roguelike is going to be, it's incredibly difficult. But, you know, that is just something that will take time, more time than I dedicated to it. Over these past couple days, kind of dipping in and out, but yeah, it's pretty cool, and it plays fairly tightly. Like, it's got a predictable jump arc, like Spelunky or something like that. Maybe not as like rigid as Spelunky is, because I know people who play Spelunky are really crazy about it. Yeah, like the way that it puts stuff in front of you, it's very much like, how much can I level up before I try and make these next couple of steps. And that's balanced off by the longer you stay in a level, the tougher the enemies get.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. So, like, a given level, like, when I've gotten out of the first level, it takes me about, like, three and a half minutes to get out of it. And then I get to the second level and die almost immediately. So it is like Binding of Isaac in that fashion. Like, getting out of the basement and into, what's the next one? Like, the cellar or the caves or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like Binding of Isaac in that you find shops and random items that, you know, give you money and also different perks and abilities and things. So, like, as the commando, there's an ability to, like, fire a howitzer randomly every 20 or so shots, right? And so you have to manage that. And the thing that I die most to is being overwhelmed, like outnumbered. You know, just because my shots won't do enough damage, and the cooldown on the cannon, which does damage to everything in front of you, is a little bit too long, from what I've seen. But those, you know, it's like Binding of Isaac in that if you get a couple of good items at the start, that means you're going to have a blessed run, right? And so you're able to go forward. So I dig it a lot, especially from a presentational standpoint. From a color palette and kind of fidelity of pixel art stance, it looks kind of like a Sword and Sorcery a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, except
so like Atari era?
Maybe. I would say, like, if somebody from today went back and like designed, I don't even know. That says that people of today have a better design aesthetic than you know, people from way back when. But
Have you seen clothing from the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I cannot confirm or deny.
And man, classical music, dubstep's where it's at.
Am I right? Yeah. No, but like so like it's better than Atari era. Like, it's real, you know, it's relatively tiny pixels, but your dude is real tiny. And like, if you're not like down with having a real tiny dude on a screen, but what that does is it makes the bigger enemies, which would feel like normal enemies on a regular game like Rogue Legacy or something like that, they feel real epic, right? So like, nice. it plays with the sense of scale in a real cool way, and the music is fantastic too. Like, I kind of want to see if the soundtrack is available for download regularly. But
is it like a chiptunes type of deal?
Yeah, it's like chiptunes, except it's real atmospheric and moody, so it's kind of tense the whole way around.
Huh. I can't think of it. I wonder if there's a game out there that has 8-bit graphics, but like decidedly not 8-bit music.
I don't know. I don't know if that would achieve the effect that that they're looking for.
No, it'd just be an interesting juxtaposition. I'm trying to think. I suppose. I can't think of anyone who's done it. And probably because it's a juxtaposition that does feel out of place.
Yeah. So, like,
I mean, some of the old Castlevania games had some interesting, not real chiptune-y music. Although, yeah. Would you call that? That wouldn't be 8-bit, I guess.
It's pretty 8-bit, like, especially on the NES, you know, in the you know, Japanese releases, they had those special chips which made it sound like their music was leagues and above beyond. There's definitely the case, like, especially with Sword and Sorcery, where, like, it is chiptune or 8-bit-esque music that has an orchestral or rock aesthetic applied to it. And, like, the rock thing is definitely something that happens with Castlevania, where they have, you know, approximations of electric guitar throughout the whole thing, even though it is supposed to be, like, this Baroque Middle Ages, you know, kind of aesthetic to it, right?
Ye oldie electric guitar.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's an axe, but you spell it with an E.
Well, an extra E, so it's an axie.
I just want to hear, excuse me, I just want to hear, you know, Pac-Man womp-womping around the screen to some sort of epic Hans Zimmer score.
Yeah. Oh, man, if I had any music production ability whatsoever, I would probably insert that right now. However, I do not. So let's just say, like, somebody Google for Pac-Man the Opera, and we will assume that it's there. But yeah, Risk of Rain, you know, in the crop of, you know, roguelike games that have come out, it kind of seems to be relatively unsung. You know, I never heard about it as much as, like, I heard about, say, Rogue Legacy, although I was, you know, very predisposed to enjoy Rogue Legacy because it's from the Don't Shit Your Pants guys. But yeah, like, just roguelike seems to be really, really in fashion, and I hadn't heard about it that much aside from seeing it on a Steam sale and maybe on Polygon that once. So I wanted to bring that to people's attention if they're looking for overly difficult randomized levels.
Does the game have any sort of long-term progression?
Okay, so I haven't played long enough to get too far beyond the starting point. If you select the easiest difficulty, which is Drizzle, I guess, as opposed to just, like, Rain or whatever the hardest one is, because every game has to be cute and label stuff instead of being easy, normal, and hard, be like, oh, it's like hard, nightmare, hellish, bleh. Hard, nightmare, hellish, MLG.
Hellish, bleh.
Yeah. but if you choose the easiest one, it says, note your progress is not saved. I don't think that it has as much continuity or through line as, say, Rogue Legacy does, which keeps your war chest going throughout, you know, okay, or your upgrade path. But I can't say that right now, given where I'm at.
All right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I can't remember if I said this on the show, if I just tweeted it at some point or just thought it to myself. But roguelikes and roguelites and roguelite likes, et cetera, are kind of the new FPS. Or, you know, you could say kind of the new platformer. We're just, that seems to be, as you pointed out, very in vogue. And that's kind of like the base that everyone is iterating off of right now.
Yeah. Well, it's great for indies because, like, you don't have to have spectacular art, although I would say the art in, you know, Risk of Rain, although not spectacular, is pretty good and serviceable and, mm-hmm, like, totally works for me. Like, I dig it a lot. And you know, like, Binding of Isaac, that's whoever Edmund McMillan gets to do his art. So that is pretty good in kind of a flash way. But like, the game itself is, like, systems-based. And, you know, like, it's dependent on you being able to manipulate maybe a handful of variables as opposed to throw a huge budget at a bunch of art assets like you would for an FPS or, you know, so-and-so, right?
Well, I think, too, like, definitely for indies, but I think broadly now as we get to this next generation or whatever you want to call it, but our, you know, the ability to kind of compute and track and create from a system standpoint has far outstripped our ability to create one-to-one. And so roguelikes naturally lend themselves to that kind of procedural generation or kind of an element of randomization based on a system. And I think that just as the area of innovation that you'll see in the future is all going to be based on that. Just because, you know, it's, we can only make things higher def and more detailed on a one-to-one scale where you're mm-hmm. drawing every leaf on the tree. We yeah. can only do that for so long. And then you're going to hit this point where, you know, you just don't have enough hours mm-hmm. to create a game with that level of detail without setting up a system and then letting the game create itself.
So when you say one-to-one, you're talking about like bespoke content where like I put this pixel here because I meant to, and yeah. I wanted you to see to see it in this order, damn it.
Yeah. Or even, I mean, in, you know, like all the smoke in Call of Duty is procedurally generated, but
yeah.
you're going to, you know, so much attention has to go into building the kind of design of the level.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to go down this corridor and then we're going to have this quick time event and then this set piece is going to blow up. Whereas I think in the future, in the vein of roguelikes, and I don't know if roguelikes have a monopoly on this, but in the vein of procedural generation, they're going to say, hey, here are the kinds of things I want to inhabit my world. Here are the kind of events that I want to happen. And then it's going to iterate off of that.
I don't think they do. And I definitely know they don't because I can cite at least two examples. One of which I played, you know, the other of which I haven't. The one that I haven't played, Resistance 2. I can't say this about Resistance 3, but like their multiplayer mode, which was like the co-op, where it was you and like three other people, each of you had a class, and you were going yep. through these dungeons that was like puzzle pieced together. So it was like, okay, you're going to go through these couple warm-up areas. Here is like a mid-boss area. Here is so-and-so. And then here's the final boss area. And it was these set pieces that were just kind of put together modularly. That feels, you know, like Binding of Isaac, where he has like a finite number of rooms that are put together in a particular order in such a way that somebody who really knows what's happening here can guess, you know, roughly what's going on based yeah. on the patterns that they're seeing, right?
Yep.
And the bigger one, which is the one I have played, which is Left 4 Dead, which, like, yeah, the actual geometry of the levels is the same from, you know, time to time. But everything that you're seeing that you're actually shooting and fighting is determined by AI, depending on how you're doing, right? And that
that's
like
one of,
like, you know, like when we talk about the a systems based approach to making games better and more varied and cooler, that is exactly what we, you know, like that is exactly what we're referring to, which yeah. is, you know, something that responds to the way that you're playing and experiencing and gives you something that will match, you know, like your prior performance. Right.
I think that's a great example. And I think the future of gaming and where all this computing power is eventually going to lead us mm-hmm. is it's not just going to be the enemy layouts that are randomized, but then the levels are going to be randomized,
yeah.
Which you already see with the indie roguelikes and everything like that, to then the stories being told within those levels mm-hmm. are different. And that's one I don't think anyone has a clear idea on how to crack that nut. But I think that's going to be the next huge innovation
yeah.
is when there's true, I don't know if procedural is right, storytelling, mm-hmm. Where it's kind of, hey, versus giving a story that has to play out a certain way, you know, based on the randomized mix of characters and motivations, mm-hmm. a story can kind of evolve. And yeah. that's really exciting to me.
And I think the real magic there is going to be like, not only that they can do that, but can they make it so that you don't notice the difference?
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
So it feels like your exact thing, you know.
And then you will have passed the Turing test and yeah. the video game will have rights.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. yeah. So it's kind of like, okay. So Left 4 Dead, sorry. The Walking Dead is amazing because they have taken every eventuality into consideration and written something for every choice that was possible to make. Right.
And
at the very least, they gave you the illusion of feeling like that was the case.
They wrote right? a story and they wrote a bunch of choices that got mapped to the story.
Yep. Okay. So,
but it was a good story.
So we see where the holes are in that. Like the promise mm-hmm. that we're looking for is like, can they actually have a story that is malleable to those different variables as opposed to relying on kind of this heuristical approach to generating these stories based on choices. You know, how much of it is illusion of choice, how much of it is actual choice that you can make, and how much illusion is applied to smoothing over any inconsistencies that might be applied to a, you know, bespoke story. And yeah. like let me be clear here, anybody who's listening, like I fucking love a bespoke, like written out, like front to back story that you're supposed to like see in a particular order. That is really, really cool.
If it's well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's plenty of games that have that story and it's done poorly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, it's good. Movies and books and pretty much every medium up to games just breathed a sigh of relief. So thank you.
No. So what I'm saying is, like, Last of Us, that doesn't change. Like, okay, I didn't kill this clicker, so this one came up and reinfected Ellie. So, oh, shit, we need to get her to a place. Like, I don't think that the Last of Us would have been helped by that. Maybe it would have, but, that isn't the reality we live in. But, like, that's a little bit of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get to this point at someday. But I don't think you can tell a traditional story through a procedural way. I think what those stories, at least initially, are going to look more like is you're given a randomized set of characters, each one with their own motivations.
Yeah.
Kind of like how in the Skyrim games... Skyrim?
Elder Scrolls? Yeah, there we go.
If Skyrim didn't suck.
Yeah. But it's in the Elder Scrolls games, how the big thing was like each AI was given like a task and motivations.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there were some weird ways that they could find to accomplish those objectives that wasn't necessarily scripted. I think you'll get characters with motivations, and then based on who you choose to focus on, you know, who you choose to piss off, who you choose to, you know, help. Yeah. Characters will become more or less important. I don't know how they'll ladder that up to an overarching story. That's the big question.
Yeah.
Oh no, didn't you hear Peter Molyneux, or however he pronounces his name, he's releasing that game next year.
Yeah. Oh man, and this year is going to be the year of Linux on the desktop. Yeah.
Seriously, wasn't that basically what Fable was supposed to be?
It's what Fable is supposed to be. It's what Milo or whatever his name was supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah, it's what Goddess
he was supposed to be the game.
Yeah, it was me. No. Yeah. So I think that there exists...
I've totally derailed you. Sorry.
No, don't worry. But as ever, there exists this huge gulf between games where you make the story by playing them, you know, such as a Left 4 Dead, which was... totally like, oh dude, you should have been there. The grinder and smoker and liquor came down and we totally messed them up, but then the last dude didn't survive and we were all like, we got around without you, and he died, right? Like the experience of playing the game is the story. The gulf between that and the experience the designer wanted you to, you know, to actually go through, like that, like there is fertile ground in between those. And we just have to hope that we use these extra CPU cycles for good, which is filling those in, versus for evil, which is embellishing towards the later end.
Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is copywriting candy.
Which is copywriting candy.
Yeah.
So I don't have nearly as much to say about this last one. I think I've talked about it a couple of times here and there. This is something that I have had kind of what I feel is the ideal experience as opposed to before, because I was playing with a controller on a couch on a big screen. So there is a platforming game called Dust Force.
Oh, that's really awesome.
Yeah. So Dust Force, it's kind of like Super Meat Boy. If the goal wasn't just to rescue your bandage girl or whatever, but instead you are an elite cleaning force with brooms, and the goal is to run over dusty surfaces in platforming levels and increasingly elaborate settings and such, and trying to piece together combos and keep together your health meter in order to do these big gigantic moves and kill enemies and such. It's real fun. It's got an awesome art style, I think. It has like this iconic vectory feel with really fluid animation, which works really well for me. The platforming feels pretty tight. That is one of the ones that I feel the experience is a little bit inconsistent, because it says it has controller support, but you have to use your mouse in order to enable it, which feels like a real bummer to me, but that's why I bought that keyboard with the mouse inside of it, so blah. Mm-hmm. It's one that I picked up, I think, on an indie bundle here a little while back, a couple years or so, And yeah, it plays real cool. I think that Super Meat Boy probably has slightly better controls on the margin, just because of the way that it was put together. But the animation and the art in this one kind of makes up for that. I like the premise a lot, which is you're running around dusting stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So like when I say platforming and different maneuvers, you have like a dash, you can do midair, you can do double jumps, you can run up walls, you can run across ceilings. Attacking things midair keeps you in the air, and doing any of these moves in succession within a certain amount of time, kind of in a Devil May Cry-esque fashion, keeps your chain meter going.
Very cool.
Nice.
Yeah. It's pretty neat. And I don't know that I have anything more interesting to say about it than that. It was more just me saying, huh, I wonder what this would look like on my big screen. And, oh, it's sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. So do you guys have any questions about that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I've done enough damage with your first game.
So that's what I've been playing, cleaning up what I've been talking about. And now that we've cleared the air, I would ask you, David, what have you been playing?
I've actually been playing, Steam had a free weekend this past weekend for Saints Row IV.
Yeah, Saints Row intravenous drugs.
So I've been playing that, although I don't exactly know what to say without spoiling stuff.
Okay, so Ben, I think that you are the guardsman in terms of spoilers.
You're the person who have a thin skin. Yeah.
You're the canary in the spoiler coal mine, and I spell coal mine K-O-L-E, because apparently I have no regard for ruining people's experiences. Is it safe to say 6 months later that something happens that gives you superpowers?
That's fine. Okay. Just don't talk about the first mission, I'd say.
Okay, yeah. That's one thing I was going to say. It's the first mission is really, really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
The first mission, the thing you do in the first 20 minutes, which canonically is the spoiler-free zone. Like, you can say whatever you want about the first half hour of a game.
I don't know if that's true or not, though, because, like, Mass Effect 2 got ruined for me that way, you know?
Did it? What motherfucker ruined that for you?
I'm not saying you did. I'm just saying, you know, I saw things, okay? I don't want to talk about
it. I've seen things.
I saw things, man.
You've seen sea ships glittering off the shoulder of Orion. You've seen attack beams off of the rings of Jupiter. You've seen Normandies being shot down by the collectors.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Continue. So, therefore, with those extremely vague guidelines in place, David, talk about superpowers.
With those extremely vague guidelines in place, literally everything you say will be wrong.
Yep.
Can I reference who the enemy is?
I think so.
Aliens. Right. I haven't played the game, and I know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's in the trailers.
To give you I'm in the first, I feel like this isn't a spoiler considering Aliens. I'm just after the first time you fly a spaceship.
Okay.
Potentially the only time you fly a spaceship, I don't know.
I was going to say, that mission wasn't great anyway, so yeah, that's fine.
See, that's funny because actually one part that was noteworthy is I stumbled upon quite possibly one of the most bizarre bugs in a game I've ever seen, which is, at least on the PC version, at one point you're flying through an obstacle course and the walls start closing in, and if your frames per second aren't high enough, they close in too fast, and it's actually impossible to complete the level.
PC gaming.
Yeah. So I had to actually turn all the settings down to low for that level.
Bug or like Psycho Mantis level trickery?
Bug, because that doesn't happen on the PlayStation 3. No. Continuing.
Also, yeah. It doesn't happen in the scenario where that would actually be rather meta.
No, so that mission that you're talking about, Like, I wouldn't say its use of licensed music is as effective, but it's it's pretty effective. Not as effective as like the one that comes later, but
I feel like that's something that Saints Row does really well, is its use of licensed music.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that, like, early on, they kind of set up the whole, like, hey, let's get in a car, and then we're both going to sing along to the radio scene with Kinsey, and she just refuses.
Yeah, well, that's a that's a specific reference to Saints Row 3, where they hop in the car and they sing a Sublime song.
Love is what I got, right?
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed, like, that shout-out to the previous one.
Yeah. And then they like, in Saints Row fashion, they like quadruple subvert that. I forget how many times they reverse their stance on singing along to a song in a car. But yeah, it's specifically, at the very least, in that spaceship mission, the song they choose works for me for some reason.
Right.
As a Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan fan. I'm not a fan of either of those people. However, Will Ferrell. Yeah, Will Ferrell had his time and his place.
But it is over. No.
And there's no excuse for Chris Kattan. But
poor Kattan.
You realize he has like one of those curses where he just gets tinier and tinier and tinier every year. It's like thinner, but with, you know, annoying.
I don't know. I like this board game.
Ugh. Man, okay, so all of a sudden, by saying that, you have assumed all of the disdain that I have for Chris Kattan, Dennis. Congratulations.
Guys, I did a joke. Did you hear it?
You are effectively Corky Romano.
That's low, dude. Oh,
yeah, okay, so I take that back. Some things were said.
I didn't mean them.
Do you like the game? Have you gotten to the stuff that's real cool?
Overall, I do.
I'm getting used to having one arm.
I really like it. I like the first mission after the game actually starts, where it's all Stepford style.
Yep. No, it's just make a reference to a game that is far outside of spoiler territory. It's like that one mission in Fallout 3.
I don't remember that one. Oh, wait.
Yep, there you go. You got it.
That was really well done. The superpowers I initially didn't like, but I feel like once they get some of the upgrades, they're actually really well implemented. Mm-hmm. Although I do think it's a little bit too bad that they make cars irrelevant.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like, they make them irrelevant, but still give you the ability to upgrade your cars, which is like, why would I ever do that?
Previous game, like, I maxed out maybe like 5 cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I don't mind the design choice, because you feel so much more powerful than you did in the last Saints Row game. You're like, how could I ever drive from one end of the map to the other when I could do this instead?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Sure. And I think that the thing for me, like, initially I kind of, like, the pacing seemed off to me. And I think what I decide is I think it's basically best to think of it as Saints Row 4 is in a lot of ways more of an expansion pack, or like a very direct sequel to Saints Row the Third.
It was initially designed like that. Like, it was right, like, it was initially Enter the Dominatrix. So,
right. Yeah. Which they've now actually released.
Yes.
It very, very quickly gets you up to the point where you're at least comparably powerful to how you were at the end of Saints Row the Third. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, one of the real, real early missions just, like, gives you a tank you can summon at any time.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really good. I like a lot of the characterization. The I'm a little bit, maybe this will come back, I'm a little bit disappointed they didn't do a little bit more with the presidency thing, although the opening, like, sequence is incredibly well done.
Which did you pick?
For which?
Say either H or A.
What? You mean H or C? Okay, so let me put a marker here so I can do some creative editing. Did you pick? Okay, so say H for or C for.
I went for.
Okay, can you take that again and say, I went for H?
Okay, I went for H.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm taking a strong stance. No, sorry.
Yeah.
People of America. Just that section, I feel like the density of, like, I would say kind of like narrative and like dialogue Easter eggs in that thing is really, really dense. You know, the fact that when you're choosing your voice for your character, what they actually do to demo it is like a political speech in each of the voices.
Yeah.
And
which voice did you pick?
I went with the same one I did the previous one, the British fella.
Yeah.
I kind of had the urge to choose Nolan North just because I found that very funny. But
yeah, it's real good. I picked him by accident at the start, and then I switched back, and then I switched back again because I like Nolan North.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing, and this is completely arbitrary, that kind of tipped the scales, is just his political speeches are recycled from the other characters.
Uh-huh.
In, like, the intro, so. But, no, just that whole section, and I love the fact that right at the beginning, you have to make, like, four choices, and none of them matter.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like The Walking Dead most of the time.
Boom! Take that.
I don't really think that.
Take that.
Take that game we love.
Take that game we love, and also people that I have interacted with and are very nice. So,
yeah, I recently got the dubstep gun, and that's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is definitely a thing. And, like, I found myself, like, reluctant to pull off the trigger on that because the music was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, this apparently makes me an awful person, but I actually like a lot of dubstep, and, yeah.
I was going to say, what do you got against dubstep?
What I have against dubstep is that it is very popular to hate dubstep. However, I will hear something in popular media when I deign to break my bubble and expose myself to popular media and think, huh, that actually sounds like kind of dark and, you know, kind of cool and beat and atmospheric and blah, blah, blah. People say, oh, that's totally dubstep. I'm like, huh, I apparently am an awful person.
There's a lot of bad dubstep out there. However, there's some good stuff, too.
Yeah.
Just anything in literally any category ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what about the Rites of Spring, right? I mean, what? Do I like people rioting? Come on. Come on, Stravinsky. What are you doing here?
It's just a Corvin. It made people go crazy.
So, I'm sorry, David. I talked over you for that.
Oh, no. It still kind of shocks me that even after I display my superpowers and take out like 50 aliens, some random NPC will come over and start trash talking me. But
now you know how
they only do it once.
That's pretty good, Dennis. Sorry.
What did you say?
Yeah. He said
it's pretty annoying that even after you display your superpowers that someone will still come over and trash talk you. And I said, now you know how Jesus felt.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So did you buy it, or was it just the free weekend?
Just the free weekend. I'm probably going to buy it the next time it comes around on sale. I don't have the time, honestly, to be that involved in a game right now, so right. I didn't want to buy something I knew I would play to the end.
Yeah, so that makes you much wiser than me. Okay.
Foreshadowing for our question.
Rubbing it in my face. Man. So let's see here. Who do we have left? We have Dennis left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just Dennis.
Just need to wrap it up.
What you been doing? Yeah.
So I beat Devil May Cry.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna take a second try at talking about why I like that game so much. It's freaking amazing.
You don't have to like justify it.
No, that's fair.
Justify it.
I just know last week I was under the heavy influence of a head cold and a cough and being awake for too long. So I don't know if I made any sense. But yeah, but the new Devil May Cry or the Devil May Cry reboot is freaking
DMC.
Awesome. DMC. No, it's got the subtitle Devil May Cry. So I don't know if you who knows what it's called. this game I played, the game formerly known as DMC, I don't even know, but it's awesome. I think I said last week that it's probably my favorite visual design of any game. And I totally stand by that just in the execution of the concepts they have. And then in the quality of the concepts they have. So it's just so many cool ideas. And I mean, you guys are talking about Saints Row here, and they have a lot of cool ideas kind of used for humor. Mm-hmm. This just has, like, again and again, really cool, just striking visual ideas that they execute well. So for example, for one of the missions, you're going after the demon that's kind of heading up the news or propaganda department or whatever. And it has a prison that is hidden in a lake, by which I mean it's hidden in the reflection of the big real world news tower in the lake next to it. That's kind of how you get into limbo there, as you kind of go through the lake. But when you get into that, it means that, you know, your gravity is still right side up and everything in this reflected world is upside down. So you're running around on like the roof for everything. And that's just really, really cool. But you get to the boss fight and you fight this demon, which is actually just a gigantic talking head like you would see on any generic newscast, made up of all these different video screens of news stories. Huh. And you kind of have to fight him. And there are sections of the boss fight where you actually go inside the head and it does. I'm trying to think of how to describe it. Like it looks like kind of live action news footage from a helicopter of you as, you know, as you're fighting, you're still controlling yourself and fighting all these demons around you. But then it's the boss. His name is Bob Barbas, you know, kind of doing news commentary on you, you know, like sightings again of the degenerate Dante. We know that. And then, you know, he'll give some kind of kernel of truth from your past and then just start spinning it. Mm-hmm. And like the stories on you in these sections just keep on getting worse and worse until he's kind of outright saying from eyewitness accounts, we know that he's like a pedophile and a rapist and, you know, all these bad things. And it's just really, really cool. And, you know, so you kind of fight your way out of that news story to ultimately defeat him.
Right.
Just so good and so cool.
Yeah. Stylistic.
Yes, stylish as the, you know, when you get to that level.
With like three S's.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's sensational. It's still hardcore, got, you know, the heavy metal screaming voice type of thing going on. But that's that's part of the shtick. That's fine by me. As I've gotten more competent with the controls and the various weapons that it gives you, the combat has just gotten more and more and more fun. Just being able to juggle someone, you know, an enemy really well, or to take on a group of enemies perfectly, you know, by knowing the depth of moves at your disposal and being able to pull that off feels just really, really rewarding. And ultimately, I mean, that there's a lot of really cool window dressing that I just spent 5 minutes talking about how I love. But ultimately, the game is a series of, you know, boxes wherein you fight enemies. Right. So it's a good thing that the combat is that deep and that fun and that rewarding, because that's the main gist of the game. They do some good things with the environment to mix it up. So like I said, in the world where you're upside down for everything, you know, you fight on a lot of places that have kind of open air roofs. So you have to be careful about where you're standing and where you're landing when you're doing your air combos, or else you'll fall into the sky, which is cool. Hmm. There's one where you're playing in this kind of limbo version of a carnival. It's one of the early levels. And there's a tilt-a-whirl in the area that you're fighting in that's just spinning madly out of control. And usually a big part of Devil May Cry fighting is kind of doing aerial combos. You get one enemy up into the air, or a group of enemies up into the air, and they're vulnerable there. But if you stay up in the air too long, the tilt-a-whirl will swing around and you know, take out everyone. So you kind of have to adjust your fighting style to launch people into the air, into this tilt-a-whirl, without yourself going up into the air. Huh. And again, knowing your weapons and knowing what moves will do that versus what moves will take you into the air as well, is this nice kind of playing with your standard arena. No. So just it's great, and I'm playing through it again. So you were joking about difficulty modes and funny naming, right? So this has, I think it's got human, it's got Demon Hunter, Nephilim, Son of Sparta, which is it's the hardest difficulty, but then they remix all the enemy layouts. So you're playing through the same areas, but it's all filled with more difficult enemies. Then they've got Dante Must Die. Or no, it's one before. So it's the three I mentioned. Dante Must Die is the hardest. Or Son of Sparta is the hardest. Dante Must Die is the remix enemies. Something like that.
Yeah.
Then they've got Heaven or Hell, which is everything dies in one hit with the remixed enemy layouts. And then they've got Hell in Hell, which is Dante dies in one hit. Everything else has regular health. Jeez. So that's for someone who likes, you know, sadistic levels, no pun intended, sadistic levels of difficulty. I'm just drooling over this game. So
yeah,
it's a ton of fun.
Is there enough distinction? So you mentioned a couple of variables, specifically, you know, how many hits things can take, and also level layout kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Have you run enough of them to notice that they make enough of a difference to warrant those crazy bombastic names, or are those names just such a part of the Devil May Cry experience that if they weren't there, it wouldn't feel like the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like you said, the cutesy naming thing where everyone feels like they have to have drizzle, you know, rain and downpour instead of easy, normal, and hard. Yeah. The Heaven or Hell and Hell and Hell are kind of relate to, you know, one hit kills, which is an interesting concept. I haven't gotten there yet. But, you know, overall, there is definitely a noticeable difference with the remixed enemy layouts. And so, you know, whereas before it would just be a group of basic enemies, now it's, you know, essentially what are boss enemies that only take damage from one type of weapon, or all the enemies have shields now, and there's a bunch of flying enemies to go along with them, that sort of thing. So there's definitely, you know, the difficulty curve keeps up with your mastery of the combat system.
Right.
Does... Yeah. You know, the previous Devil May Cry games, particularly the first one and some of the third one, were very difficult even on their easy mode. Is that still the case here?
Yes, it's difficult, but they've taken away, like, if you die, you have to completely restart the level. So if you die, you can either use a gold orb to continue from where you were, or you can just select continue, which will start you from the end of the most recent area, and then we'll apply a score debuff or a penalty at the end of the level. So, you know, everything's got a score attached to it, and you get -10% if you die once, -20% if you die twice, and so on.
Is that related to your the demon blood you get?
I think so. It's also related to your rank for each level.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say is the game, I mean, I gotta in relation to other Devil May Cry games, it does a lot better about I don't know what to call it, misogyny, or, you know, portraying women in the game. So I say that, and then I remember that the game starts off with Dante having a threesome with demon strippers. So I don't know how much I can say that.
Baby but steps.
Baby steps. The, you know, one of the main characters, you know, is a girl and just has a very fleshed out role, is important to the plot in more than just being someone's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So it's, and you know, in general, it's, you know, less of the, I don't know. I'm saying something before I've thought about it too much.
Oh, okay, so it sounds like what you're trying to say is, in general, it's less exploitative.
Yeah, there you go. And specifically, the one character that gets a lot of focus is well developed and well played out and feels, you know, at home and equal to Dante or Virgil or anyone else in the game.
Would you say she's well endowed?
No, totally. And she doesn't dress sexy or anything like that. It's just, you know, she dresses like any other person you might see on the street.
Okay.
So it feels like a very, in a game that is all about over the topness, it felt like a very conscious decision for them to kind of exercise restraint in that area. And I appreciated it.
So you mean they're caving to the PC police and that they are, you know, like kowtowing to Anita Sarkeesian's demands and that blah, 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 the feminazis and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that.
Okay, so, cool. Those are all good things.
I can't decide again because there's also one of the enemy characters is played up to be like a total hobag, and you know, but I can't tell how much of that is them criticizing the sexualization of people like that because she's you know that's that. And I don't know how much of it was intentional or how much of it was commentary, how much of this being like over the top. Yeah. But, that's that, you know, not every game has to be all about that, but I appreciated the way that they handled the main character. That was a female. That was well done on that.
Yeah.
Rest of the game is still pretty over the top, but, take that for what it's worth. But anyway, overall the game is just incredibly fun to play. I'm on my, you know, second round through it. And, just everything about the game is great.
Yeah. Cool. I'm very happy to hear that. Was that a PSN game, or was that one that you picked up of your own volition?
That's PS Plus.
Okay. Cool.
All one that I did pick up of my own volition though was Spelunky.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, that was one that I played, but decided not to talk about because I did not know what I was talking about. So.
Yeah. No. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It is definitely in terms of difficulty falls in the roguelike camp. Like it is crazy amazingly difficult.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, that's like its entire thing, and they built the PS3 one around the PC version, like with the daily challenges and stuff.
Yeah, like actually giving you get you one shot.
Yep, you got one shot and that is it.
Yeah
no. Like my relationship with Spelunky is very much like my relationship with Binding of Isaac, which is people that I respect and know and like really dig their opinion on games, really loved it and dug it and got into it. However, they did the same, you know, however, I know that like maybe for me, like talking about it at any level, which is critical, will belie my entire like lack of skill at this type of game. So with that in mind, and with those incredibly low standards in front of you, what do you think of Spelunky?
No, I feel very much the same way you do, where it's like, man, I am so out of my depth here. There are at any given time. So, you know, 2D platformer, randomly generated roguelike style game.
Yeah.
And at any given moment, just there are so many things you need to be aware of at once. You know, you need to be looking for traps. You need to be aware of what enemies are around you. You need to be managing your inventory to make sure you have enough bombs if you come upon the damsel in distress so you can rescue her, unless you've got enough health, in which, you know, so there's just all these moment-to-moment decisions and broader strategic decisions that kind of play out really quickly on top of, you know, some really good just platforming that make, you know, every time I died, I knew what I did wrong, and it was a situation where I just panicked and didn't make the right decision or something like that. And no matter how well you're doing or how many good items you get, you know, half a second of stupid decision making or like a lack of impulse control will just kill you outright, which is frustrating and fun all at the same time. Again, kind of David, to your point, the gameplay cycle is like 10 minutes long.
Sure.
So you're never losing too much time. But it's, you know, it's just, and I'm just getting acquainted with it. I haven't even really gotten to the final area yet. But it's a great game to play, and it's a lot of fun in that punishing controller throwing, oh my God, this is so, so difficult kind of way.
Well,
so, yeah,
you can, can't you like pay off a dude to like mine tunnels back to the beginning so you can like start at later levels and stuff? And
that is the case. However,
and you can like, can't you unlock new guys?
Yes, you can't. You can unlock different characters, kind of like the Binding of Isaac. My understanding is that even if you do unlock the ability to skip the early levels, you do not, because going through those early levels eventually becomes trivial enough that the rewards that you get through doing them are greater than whatever it would cost you through the risk of not being able to pass them. So eventually, like the jungle is, you know, not entirely like just difficult, right?
Yeah, I still probably 4 out of 5 runs die in the mines without ever reaching the second area. The other thing is, you actually, so you can pay the guy off, but it's not a one time. You get to him once and he's like, hey, I need a bomb. So you give him a bomb and there's no shortcut. And you're like, you little shit, you just cheated me. And so you get to him a second time. He's like, hey, I need a rope. And so you give him a rope and there's still no shortcut when you get back to the main menu. So you're like, okay, I'm definitely being duped here. What the hell? You get to him a third time and he says, hey, I need $10,000. If you give him that, then you get the shortcut. And then it's the same thing for the jungle area, only the price is doubled. So he needs 2 bombs, 2 ropes, and I imagine $20,000 and on up.
Yeah.
Then he drives off to Nigeria.
Yeah, but I mean, it says something that, you know, 4 out of 5 times I can't even get a freaking green hill zone here. So it's fun. It's very addicting and it's very fast paced.
How do you unlock new characters?
I found one in a level randomly, and then there were like 10 of them available to you from the start.
I just remember one of the dudes has an awesome turban, and I always wanted to play as that guy.
Yep.
I've always wanted a turban.
Hey, those are cool hats.
Yeah. No. Keep you cool when it's hot. Keeps you warm when it's cool.
I've always wanted to be in a ska band.
Yep. So this is the first opportunity we've had to talk about it. So given my lack of aptitude with Spelunky, I have not participated or even feigned to know exactly what's happening here. But there's a blog called the Spelunky Explorers Club.com where people do the daily challenge. They record themselves with their commentary, and watching them fail and die and struggle is real fun. So that is something that the Yaddle Thumbs guys do and everything. And I know that like Zach from Video Games Hot Dog is a huge fan of doing this kind of stuff. Although I don't see his participation in this that much or at all even. But yeah, I always see people playing Spelunky at weird hours of the day, like what would be the morning for whoever's time that is. Like, oh, they're doing their daily challenge. I would ask you, Dennis, are you playing it? Are you playing it on your Vita? Or are you playing it on something else? Or are you playing it on your PS3?
I'm playing it on my Vita. So they have a sale. It was akin to a Steam sale. They had it for, I think, $3 or something like that. So it was pretty sweet.
No, I feel like that's
really ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know. I tried it on PC, and even though I think it was originally for PC, right? But I felt like the control scheme was such that it would have worked better with a controller.
Yeah, it feels really comfortable with the controls that the Vita has. I don't know if there would be anything significantly wrong with like a WSAD format.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't play much. I remember the exact format of how they handled jumping being a little quirky.
How do you mean?
I don't, you know, is there some sort of like, again, it's been a while since I played, is there some sort of difference between, say, like jump down or, you know, some sort of mechanic like that, or?
Yeah, for like hanging from a ledge, You have to hold down and hit jump to get down.
I don't know. I just, however jumping was handled, I found it very awkward with the controller and or without the controller. And it seemed like with the controller it might be better, but
it's not carried out. It's not carried out to this degree, but it is like Castlevania in that it is incredibly predictable the way that things are going to act. So once you learn those rules, you can kind of depend on them.
Yep. A good way to say it. So that's that's Spelunky.
Yeah, no, it's like literally earlier today when I was installing games on my my TV machine, that was the first one that I put in.
Oh, cool!
And even though I am ashamed of ever talking about it, I am happy that you did, so I could share what little I know about it, which is the extent of everything that I just said.
No, what little I know about it is fuck traps, fuck spiders, fuck snakes, fuck that ghost.
Fuck that ghost.
And don't even get me started on the Tiki Man. I'm lucky if I see a Tiki Man. Thank you very much.
I feel like, Cole, you come across like you're like revealing a deep dark secret. Like, guys, I'm really glad I can finally tell you.
This is a safe place.
I play Spelunky. Right?
So I got Spelunky when it came out on Xbox Live Arcade, like a year and a half ago now, something like that. Relatively, and I've just done so shittily at it. Like I've never gotten any good, and like that may just be because it was an Xbox Live Arcade, and so I didn't have a lot of opportunity to play it. Like once it hit PC, like it started taking over, like gangbusters on everything. Like people who talk about it talk about Spelunky, and they know what they're talking about. I'm just afraid of assuming any kind of authority because I've barely gotten past the jungle. Right.
Yeah. I've seen the area past the jungle twice, and I've been playing it really consistently. So I'm horrible at it as well. But it's one of those things where as you're playing it, you can tell there's a level of depth or mastery that I could get here. I definitely don't have it, but I see how someone could be good at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can just watch other people make mistakes on that blog and blah blah blah.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see that someone says that everything that could go wrong goes wrong, and I still won. So I will be watching that after the podcast. I've got like six windows open from this conversation. It's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see more about this blog.
Yeah, check it out. It ran for a little while. It looks like it hasn't run for a bit, like since late last year. But at the very least, there are some good runs that you can see, and then like you can look at any of the people involved and look at their further YouTube videos. I would recommend Chris Remo from the Idle Thumbs, just in general as a person.
Nice.
Yeah. So that sounds like we're wrapping up on the grind, which like for as low as we are in numbers of games that we've talked about, quite lengthy, which is a good thing.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for multiplayer, where you, the listeners, participate with us. So, before we jump into the prompt that we gave you, there is something from last week that I forgot to read that is in here. I would like to cultivate something of a letters segment, and Paul, via the contact, wrote in to talk about our hemming and hawing about the Steam Machine. So
cool.
I'm going to read parts of this and gloss over others. I'm sorry, Paul, but you wrote us a lot of text, but I feel like this is information we should know. Paul says, "Hey, guys, I was listening to the last episode of The Level, and I thought that I would comment on the discussion of Steam Machines. I've been building PCs for a while, and I've been intrigued by Steam Machines since they were announced. Hopefully, I can clarify a few things that you seemed unsure of. The important thing to understand is that Steam Machines are functionally the same as pre-built machines. The main differences are that most feature a unique case, a smaller form factor, and come with the Steam OS pre-installed. This is generally a bad thing, as pre-builds are notorious for being terrible value propositions compared to building your own PC. Typically, they will give you a decent processor, a large amount of low-quality RAM, a low-end GPU, with upgrade options for more than the upgrade is worth, and skimp on the fans, motherboard, power supply, etc. Also, you would end up with something. You would end up spending more money than if you had ordered high quality parts individually and put it together yourself. So he goes on to talk about the specific specs of the $500 Steam machine that was announced at CES, the CyberPower one, talking about it's an i5 processor, which is kind of just a marketing term, so we don't really know what actual model it is. So like i3 is low end, i5 mid end, i7 high ends, and the actual numbers behind those mean stuff, whereas the i5, i7, i3 don't. Goes on to talk about how RAM is something that often is skimped on, and that hard drive space, basically goes on to say, all in all, my premature opinion is that most of these Steam machines won't be as good as if you built one yourself, but that should be that should be expected. A few will probably be good enough value that the extra cost is worth not having to spend a few hours learning how to build a PC yourself. And then there are the high-cost models, roughly 1,000 plus, that are absolutely not worth it. Also, the cases and motherboards are likely to limit your ability to upgrade due to the smaller form factor. This isn't a problem of Steam Machine specifically, as any non-standard case is likely to give you those problems. Compared to buying the console, some of these machines will be a good place for someone to reap some of the benefits of PC gaming while maintaining the ease of buying a console. The initial price would likely be higher than the initial price of a console, but you would end up saving money in the end due to free online services and sales. You would also retain the ability to mod games, replace the OS, and upgrade the software. Of course, the viability of Steam machines to replace consoles relies on how well the Steam OS and Linux, more generally, is adopted by developers. That's also another topic entirely, and I fear this email is too long as it stands. XOXO, Paul. So thank you, Paul, for crystallizing a lot of those thoughts that were definitely like not floating around in my head when I was talking about Steam machines. As somebody who has built PCs in the past and plans on building one again in the future, I think that your email has pushed me over the edge towards like ignoring the Steam machine market, because if it was a single manufacturer that was taking advantage of economies of scale about parts and reducing the overall cost as opposed to what I could get from Amazon or Newegg, that would be one thing. But because of the way that Valve has set everything up, no economy of scale can be achieved. Therefore, you cannot save on cost. Therefore, if you know how to build a PC, that is your way to go. So, like what you have said has actually galvanized me into one course of action, whereas I would have probably taken another. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And thank you for writing in.
Yep. And if you want to do something similar to that, Paul went to duckfeed.tv/contact and picked the level from the drop-down menu. So we will hit those up before the regular multiplayer segment, which I will throw over to Dennis now.
All right. So we've got a question this week that builds off of kind of what we talked about last week, which, if you remember, was like, man, we just don't have any time to play video games anymore. so the question that flows from that is if there is a game or a genre of games that you're really interested in and really want to play, but you just don't have time to invest in it. So phrased another way, if you had all the time in the world, what is the first type of game that you would pick up?
Yeah. So I will ask one of you to hit this first, because I accidentally closed that window.
So. I'll start with Phil. Oh, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, no, you can go.
Yep, go.
Okay. I'll start with Phil. He says, I would have to say co-op multiplayer games. They're incredibly fun and it was – and it – and if – oh, sorry. They're incredibly fun, and if it was just my schedule, it wouldn't be so bad. But to match schedules with friends is almost impossible, especially since most of my friends still live on the West Coast, so time zones are a factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
No.
Jerk, Ben.
It just sucks. Like, when you have to break out Google Calendar and, like, check somebody's availability, like,
yeah.
That stops being games and starts being work.
See, yeah. Am I the only one that just... if someone's on Steam and they're not playing something, I just go on and say, hey, you want to play something?
I think that's the way you have to do it. But if you want to play like a specific multiplayer game or a co-op game, at a specific time, you kind of have to plan really hard around that.
Yeah. Think like Borderlands 2, where if somebody gets way too far ahead of you, ultimately they're useless to you in multiplayer.
That's yeah. true.
Yeah. So it's like if you miss one or two sessions, you end up like me. So.
yeah. By which we mean useless to me, Cole. No.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But definitely, like... So last week when we talked about like co-op games, it was like, hey, you combine the best of both, and you end up combining your social time and your game time. Whereas like if you have trouble scheduling both of those things, then trying to schedule both of them at once will also be, if not more, at least as difficult than one or the other.
Yeah, I would pay so much money for like a really good asynchronous co-op game. And maybe I'm sure one already exists, so I'd love to hear people point it out. But like, if there was a game that was a lot of fun to play, you know, had a co-op component, but you didn't have to be logged on at the same time,
yeah,
that would be awesome.
I'm sure there are any number of like iOS games, like iOS versions of board games, or maybe even stuff like browser-based games, like, you know, maybe Kingdom of Loathing or like Neptune's Pride or something like that. Where like that was just part of the game design overall, you know, that would
yeah,
be a
I'm,
thing.
I'm craving
chess.
I'm craving something a little deeper than like Words with Friends, but
yeah, yeah, and both of those things that I mentioned are both deeper than Words with Friends. So
oh,
yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah. Let's see here, Ben. What's Christopher say?
Chris says, I really enjoy games like League of Legends, but I can't take the time for games where I can't be interrupted. It's got to be something I can pause or leave if the baby needs me or if the dog is throwing up or something.
if the dog is throwing up on the baby. You have to assume a doomsday scenario, guys.
I feel like League of Legends, that's a significant portion of gaming culture that really none of us have gotten into.
I advocate.
Oh, because if we did, we'd have no time for a podcast.
That's right. I'd be true. Playing League of Legends right now.
Yeah, I can't. I can't say anything. So.
Oh, very fair.
Yeah, but yeah, like specifically, you know, as somebody who cannot be alone with his own thoughts, something that I cannot pause or pause a podcast during, is definitely kind of off the table for me.
Yeah.
And at the very least, like when I am streaming something like the Demon's Souls runs that I've done or other things that I'm doing in the future, I can talk to, you know, blind out and throw off the devil dogs that are chasing behind me. In your case, Chris, your devil dog is your own child. So
yeah. That's a cute devil dog you got
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's like a little guy. It's big. It's going to be a football player. And I was about to say, unless she's a lady, in which case dot dot dot, but if she's a lady, she can be a football player too if she wants. I'm not normative here. Yeah, basically what I'm saying is congratulations on having a kid.
Yes.
Yeah. David, what's Quentin say?
Sure. Quinn says, I would really like to get into some classic RPGs like Final Fantasy VI or Fallout 2, or point-and-click adventure games like Myst and Journeyman Project 3. The problem is, I feel I would enjoy those games most if I could play them for long stretches of time that I just don't have since I work 10-hour days.
Hey there, 10-hour days, buddy.
Yeah.
What?
I said, hey there, 10-hour days, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like especially adventure games are... I feel like if you're not going to just look up how to beat levels, you almost have to be able to, you know, give some downtime to think things through.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, at the very least, like, Myst and games of its ilk, I've never played the Journeyman Project, you can do an awful lot of work on them when you're not playing them.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, sure.
Which, like... Like a lot of problems in real life, sometimes you just wake up having realized the solution that you didn't see when you were in the middle of them.
In the shower. That's where you find the solution. So if I played these games, I would be the cleanest person ever.
Well, like, it sounds like maybe you're joking because haha nudity, but like, yeah, like sometimes the best like insights come to you when you are taking a dump or maybe driving or something that doesn't occupy the track of your mind.
Who takes a dump while driving?
Well, if you have one of those special European cars.
That's called synergy.
Literally. Man, what's the German word for synergy? Because that is the car that I will name after being able to poop in it.
Sinnerheit. I don't know.
Sinnerheit.
Dare Sinnerheit. Yeah.
Dare Sinnerheit.
So as long as we're talking about taking a dump while you're thinking.
Are you going to say something that's going to make me sad in my heart?
No. It used to be that, you know, playing games, I would get absorbed in that or absorbed in trying to solve a problem or just kind of lost in it.
Where are you going with this?
It's not weird, I promise. Lost in the point where all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow. I really have to pee right now. I should probably take care of that. Like, you know, there are games that very much lend themselves to just getting lost in it to that point where you kind of forget everything else, play for a long stretch of time, and then it's like, oh, hey, something doesn't have to be having to pee, but shakes you out of it. It's like, oh, yeah, there is, you know, everything else. And I agree. Like, I don't feel like I get to play games to that extent much anymore. Like, there'll be some times where I can play something for an hour at a time or an hour and a half at a time. Yeah. But that's maybe once a week, if not less.
Yeah,
that's because you have a wife
and a job.
If only you weren't an adult. I'm cribbing pretty hard from Merlin Man here, but like, time and attention are two distinct resources that are linked in a lot of people's mind, whereas you might have on paper, if you actually charted all of your time, enough time to play Final Fantasy VI, you might not have enough attention to, you know, to dedicate to it to get the most out of the experience, and that's what's, you know, scaring you off of it.
Yeah,
I'm just glad for a moment there I thought we were going to poop socking.
Nope.
No, no, no. I will draw a wide perimeter around that.
In what?
I don't want to answer that question.
Let's see here. Christopher Schlee says, I really want to play through every Ultima game and spinoff in order of its release. That has been in the back of my head for years now. I've played pretty much all of them at one time or another, but that would take up way too much time. And it's probably an impossibility due to my superhero ability of discovering a new game to purchase and play every 32 seconds. Hey there, buddy.
Yeah. You're in good company.
Yeah. But yeah, that's definitely something right there. How do you stop yourself from like going after the new shiny?
You have more time, which we talked about last week.
Cultivate your cynicism.
Exactly. your skepticism, rather. Like, is this thing going to be worth it? I'm going to assume not until proven otherwise.
Or your synergism.
Your sinner height. Ben, how about you? Like, is there anything that you've like said to yourself, man, if only I could ...
One example is I would like to play Bioshock Infinite again, but I have a harder time justifying doing that since I've already played it. So that's something that I have not made time for. If there was a game like a game that I absolutely wanted to play, then I would make time for it.
Yeah, replay. I hadn't thought about it that way, but replaying games is definitely a great example.
Yeah,
that's harder to justify. Yeah,
it is. And it's harder to justify games than, like, television shows, right? Or, like, anything else. Like, I will rewatch this movie, like, even though I've seen it before.
From a time investment standpoint, yes. But almost from, like, a content in games, you're going to get more meaningfully different experiences upon rewatching.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, upon re-experiencing that thing.
Yeah.
Right?
But, I mean, it's going to be, you know, a 60-hour investment to get that, so...
And it also depends on the show, too, because, like, I want to rewatch The Wire, but I would have to watch the entire series.
Yeah.
And that's a big investment.
Uh-huh. Wait, Ben, you like The Wire?
I had to reaffirm my status as The Wire guy. I hadn't brought it up in a while.
No, it was about to lapse. I was going to jump on that.
Just in case you guys forgot.
Yeah.
That's the best show
but
ever.
That actually brings up, I think Chris kind of alludes to that as well, that like, hey, I want to play this game, but I, you know, there's a whole series of games attached to that. I've got the same thing. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've tried to play through the Ratchet and Clank games, but every time I feel like compelled for some reason to start at the first one and try to make my way through. Like, it's almost like a challenge run or something like that. But the Jack games, I'm the same way. Like, there are games that I would want to either play or go back and play. Metal Gear Solid is a great example. I would love to play the Metal Gear games, but I could not bring myself to do it without starting with the earlier games and working my way through.
But is that not, like, more surmountable than just establishing, like, hey, if I was going to retouch these things, I would do it all over again? Like, for you, it's surmountable. Like, you know, there are, at the least, four games that I can play that are X number of hours, according to howlongtobeat.com, that I will have to put in. And I know that I can get one of them on PSN, probably for free, because I am Dennis. and I can get the other two in the HD collection and the fourth one for like $5 at a GameStop. Like looking at a series like that, you kind of know what's in front of you on it.
But then to do that, it's like, okay, well, this is a solid like 5 months worth of gaming for me. And I know that half of that, I mean, I'd have to go look at the actual hours. I assume that they're pretty lengthy games.
Not really.
Really?
Like 14 hours a piece?
That's not too bad. That's a small chunk of time for me.
I suppose, but I mean, like, so I cannot presume your habits, and I'm going to talk about habits when it gets around to me, so I will not horn in on your action.
No, but like, I mean, it's a combination of that and then also the new shiny, which is, you know, I could dedicate all my time to playing those games, but I feel like I would burn myself out, which would defeat the purpose of trying to play all those games.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's a lot of good points in there, Chris.
Yeah, most certainly. Let's see here. David, how about you?
Sure. Well, if I had all the time in the world, I know the first thing I'd do is accidentally step on my glasses. But after that, I don't know. I would say the two big ones for me, probably Final Fantasy VII. That's one that I played a little bit of. I didn't get why people liked it at all. And I've always kind of wanted to go back just because it's, you know, one of the biggest games within gaming, if that makes sense. And I would say the other one, if you define this question as, like, not so much games that I don't have time for, but games that I'm interested in but not willing to invest the time for, I would say probably survival horror games.
Yeah.
Always sort of interested me, but I've never really been willing to invest the time to actually do them.
Right. Yeah, that is something that feels like more of an energy concern than anything, which is like how often and how much can I push myself through this experience that is actually more draining to me than these other things that I could possibly be doing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I recognize that my paranoia is already at, you know, near critical mass, so.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. Ben, how about you? What do you wish you had time to play? Oh, I already asked you, didn't I? Dennis.
I was going to say, David, that's exactly where they want you to have your paranoia at.
It's always as I expected.
Wait, I've lost track of who I've actually like thrown off to. Dennis, have you said? Or are you?
No, I can say.
Yeah, do it.
So, I mean, Chris had kind of a lot of things that I resonated with. The one thing I would also call out, and it's kind of hinted at in the way I asked the question, if you go back and actually read the Facebook page, but fighting games are something that I'm just incredibly intrigued by and think are really cool and interesting. But to actually do it competitively and enjoy yourself, there's kind of a base level of skill you have to develop at it.
Yeah.
And I just don't have the skill, period. I like to think that I just don't have the time to develop that skill.
Well, I mean, talent is something you do or do not have. Skill is something you work to develop, right?
Sure, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'd love to like find a group of people that played fighting games together regularly and like, you know, do something like that. Seems like a lot of fun to me. But just that would require definitely way more time than I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know for me, fighting games fall under the category of I won't play games that are things I'm better at in real life. and I'm really, really, I'm fairly decent at martial arts and really, really, really bad at fighting games. For me, the comparable thing would be real-time strategy games. I don't know if you guys knew ROX, but we used to have kind of a video gaming coffee house near campus.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, near the campus of University of Cincinnati, just for the listeners.
Near University of Cincinnati. And, you know, I would watch people play, like, StarCraft, and it was very much, they weren't even playing the same game I was playing.
I just saw a GIF today of, like, somebody who, because they misclicked two times at the very beginning of a StarCraft match, they quit the game.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, that is two misclicks or, you know, something on that order of magnitude. Out of like the hundreds they do per second or minute or whatever per minute, second is crazy. yeah,
they must have like Mad Cat's controller.
Not crazy.
So it's like, nope, I didn't send these drones to get the crystals quickly enough. Therefore, yeah, I'm done. So I quit.
Ergo, yeah. Bang.
Yeah.
So I need to go back and listen to that episode because like people every time I say ergo, people say bang, and like I'm not quite sure where that came from or what it signifies. I know it's from us, but I've just lost track.
That's bad when you don't know your own references.
I've lost control of this monster.
Yep. No, it is.
Cole's just walking down the streets and people he's never met before, he says ergo and they just shout bang at him.
Yeah, I know it is the curse that I must bear. Yeah. For me, like I would really like to be able to just pay attention to anything for any given amount of time. Yeah, no. So like I've recognized that in any given day I have about 2 hours of undivided game attention that I can give. Right. And so, like, part of me in the lead up to Dark Souls 2 is, like, figuring out what I need to play on assignment, how much time I can clear to actually make meaningful progress and stuff to talk about, and just to experience in general. And that is, you know, that's involved dividing everything up into two-hour segments and seeing what days I can go, like, you know, playing these things and getting through them, right? Yeah. And that,
although, real talk, you could post up and say like, hey, it's Dark Souls is coming out in March, so we will be doing no other podcasts until I've beaten it. And everyone would be like, yeah, that makes total sense.
I've like totally built that in too. Like I have actually taken vacation days or what counts for vacation days in this weird, crazy, hippie workplace that I have in order to make sure that I can beat it within the first like 3 or 4 days. So yeah.
Sorry, it just derailed you again.
No, that's perfectly fine. But it's like it's a more holistic thing that is a symptom of just the life that I've chosen for myself, where my hobby just becomes the thing that I do for a bunch of other people's benefit, which is perfectly fine. But
is someone eating a microphone right now?
Yeah, no, I marked it to be edited, but let's see here. David, totally stop like messing with your headphone mic.
I like how it wasn't even a question.
Yep.
My bad.
Yep. I marked it. Don't worry, we can edit it, and this is also still funny. But
so your hobby is a thing that you've done for or that you're doing now for other people's benefit.
Yep. Pretty much. And I have no resentment for it, but like for everybody's sake, it's good if I can broaden my experience, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I've just spent the past 2-3 weeks reading a whole bunch of Berserk, you know? Like, and I never saw myself reading manga to talk about in front of people, but here we are. So
this is no longer my hobby. It is the cross I must bear. For the good of the people, like, I will read manga.
I don't know. Like, a lot of people want to turn their hobbies into their jobs, and I've kind of done that, except without the whole, like, paying for me to eat thing. I've got this other thing that does that, so I don't know. But we have more people who are ready to say stuff that they would that they wish they had time to do. So let's blaze through them, or at least give them the due that they are owed. Let's see here, Ben. What does the next person have to say?
Are we on Murph or are we on Chad? Because if we all read one, I should be on Chad.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you read Murph, and then we'll put somebody else on Chad. I choose you.
All right. Murph says, 4X or 4 times games intrigue me in concept, but I lack the time and patience to understand the minutia that seems essential to having any amount of success. What are 4X games?
4X games are space-based exploration, examination, exegesis, I don't know, something like that.
Exploitation is one of them.
Yeah. Think like Master of Orion, or I think Free Space might technically qualify as one of them, but like sci-fi strategy type games where you are a ship and you move around exploring different quadrants of the galaxy, harnessing resources and exploring various things that they put in front of you.
So like the less fun parts of Mass Effect.
Maybe.
FTL with spreadsheets? No.
Yeah.
I'm picturing EVE Online right now.
Yeah, no, they tend to be like there are a lot of like the old real classic like strategy kind of, if you combined like strategy and say like a civilization type thing sort of almost would you agree with that, Cole?
Yes. So civilization, looking at various Google results, is one of the touchstones for it. So the 4Xs are explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but like Master of Orion was one of the first ones to, let's see here, get that name. You know, like it actually came from a review in Computer Gaming World. Civilization is one of them, so think about that kind of gameplay loop. Yeah, I'm trying to see other examples, but they very much do require, if not like a huge time investment to play, a huge time investment to learn to play well.
They're also, though, they've kind of become one of the, along with roguelikes, they're kind of one of the indie darlings.
A little bit. And let's see here. Dennis, why don't you round us out with a chat?
Yeah, Chad says, I would really like to try Fallout. I purchased Fallout 3 at a fire sale on Amazon, but I have yet to play it. In addition, the Kingsfield series looks really interesting, considering I like From Software's latest games.
Yep.
Yeah, both good games to try.
Yeah. No, I can attest to Kingsfield. It's real good. Can't talk about it much here, because we're going to talk about it a lot a little bit later on. But yeah, Fallout, definitely, though. I think we can all agree that is one that is worth your time. Like, if you already own it, like, maybe go through the tutorial and then just take it quest by quest, treating it like a TV show, doing episode by episode. But, yeah.
Yeah, I remember liking Fallout 3 a lot. And that was my first experience with the series, so.
Yeah.
Good place to start. Yeah.
Well, we have been going for a very long time, so I will once again say, that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast or duckfeed.tv/contact to send us your thoughts, concerns, questions, etc., etc. Are you guys ready to button it up?
Yes.
In lieu of doing a huge admin section, all I will say is please tell a friend. Also, like us on Facebook and leave us a review on iTunes. And if you would like to support the network monetarily, that is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at Cole Ross, KOLEROSS.
I am at D Furia.
I am at MoneySmith777.
I am at Merkalizer.
And find your cave legs.
Eat the leg. I thought you were going to say extreme irritability is a sign of hypothermia. Yeah. And I was going to be like, well, no shit.
Yeah.
It's effing cold. No, like
wanting to go directly to the hospital is a symptom of being gunshot.
Yeah.
Man, was Steve shot? I don't know. Does he want to go to the hospital? He's like, hey, it's all he'll talk about. Yeah, he's probably been shot.